All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away, huh. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight.
All right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here in downtown Chicago. We're here till 5 a.m., as I am every weekday morning. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. every weekday morning. At 5 o'clock following this show, it's Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. And at 6, it's the great Steve Cochran, my main man, with your morning drive at 6 a.m. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. Anytime you want to call us and anytime you want to text us, it's 312-981-7200. It is Friday morning, so that means our regular Friday features will be coming up a little bit later on. You've got You Big Dummy. That's when we have real news stories of real dumb people doing real dumb stuff. We read them, and then we vote on who's the biggest dummy. Tom votes, I vote, and then the first person who gets through, listener gets through at 312-981-7200, can cast the third vote for the dummy of the week. Then we have Straight Out of Context. Straight Out of Context is when you listen to this radio station 24/7 whenever anybody at any time says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds dirty and it makes you giggle. Jot down the date, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. nickdshow@gmail.com. And also Nick D Show Spies. That's when you listen to this radio station 24/7. Whenever anybody mentions me or the show in any capacity, we want to know about it. You become a spy. Jot down the date, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And, of course, Fly Jams Friday. That's when we dedicate the later part of the show to funky stuff, R&B. We get funky on a Friday, and it's Fly Jams Friday. And we'll play some funky stuff and some really cool stuff that is all R&B and funky-related and fly-related. We like to start off your weekend on a funky note. So get your Fly Jam request ready to go, 312-981-7200. Also coming up on the show, we're going to talk with Amy Peterson, who is the co-founder and CEO of Rebel Nell. Rebel Nell is a really interesting organization that helps women who are struggling to find and retain employment. And they hire these women to be creative designers. They teach them how to craft, you know, these unique wearable art jewelry. And then it helps these women towards upward mobility. And since 2013, more than 20 women have moved out of homeless shelters due to their jewelry work with Rebel Nell. Well, they're launching their first Chicago line of what they call graffiti jewelry. And it's going to be in a pop-up store here this weekend in Chicago. So we're going to talk about the organization, how they help women, the art that they create, and the pop-up store where it's finally... This is an organization that originated in Detroit. It started in Detroit, but now it's spreading out all over the place and now coming to Chicago. So we're going to give you all the information about that. And we'll be doing that in just a few minutes. And also, John Warzak is going to join us after 2 o'clock. He is the festival organizer for the Chicago Zine Fest. The Chicago Zine Fest, or CZF, is a festival that celebrates all things zine. And a zine is like it's short, it's Z-I-N-E, it's kind of short for magazine or fanzine. And zines are created by people physically, put together, they cover so many different subjects and topics. You use a photocopier, use some paper stock, put it together, whatever you want to make a zine out of, you can. Tons of people do it, and this is a festival that celebrates that. So we're going to talk about Chicago Zine Fest this morning. Also, we are going to jump into the world of box office bombs. There have been some notorious movies that have completely bombed at the box office, and we're going to talk about those. And some of them are surprising, considering that years past, even though they bombed at the box office, they've become either classics or really beloved. But we are going to talk about some classic box office bombs this morning right here on 720 WGN. We're talking about box office bombs basically in honor of the release of The Avengers. which is the absolute opposite of a box office bomb, as already proven. So all that is coming up here on the show. Again, 312-981-7200. If you want to participate, talk, text, any of that stuff, your fly jam request a little bit later on as well. So 312-981-7200. Let me say hello to my great producer, Tom Hush. Tom, how are you?
I'm doing great, Nick. Good, how are man. You?
All right. When are you going to see? Do you have, you know when you're going to go see Endgame?
Oh, God. Probably not this weekend. I won't lie to you.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's enough time. I already have plans to go see a new 4K restoration of the bird with the crystal plumage. Dario.
The great Dario Argento.
Yeah, playing at midnight at the Music Box.
Have you ever seen my Team Dario t-shirt?
You know, I don't think I've seen you wear it. Oh, okay. I've seen your Suspiria one and your sweet Goblin one.
Yeah.
Those are amazing.
I have two, I have two Dario Argento Suspiria t-shirts and one Luca Suspiria t-shirt.
So I haven't even seen the full range of Suspiria t-shirts.
No, you haven't. You haven't. Yeah, two Dario inspired. Well, one of them is from when I saw Goblin live score.
Right.
Suspiria, which was unbelievable.
I can't even imagine.
Unbelievable. And the other one is just the old school poster with the jaw of the woman screaming,
mm-hmm.
and the Suspiria with the vibrating like worm logo.
Letters, yeah.
That one. But anyway, and I also have a team Dario, which is just a picture of the handsome Dario Argento. And it says Team Dario. It's amazing to me that, you know, Dario Argento is a strange looking dude.
Yes.
It's amazing to me how hot his daughter is. It's unbelievable.
Oh, Asia Argento.
Asia. Yeah. She is. Well, I mean, her mom is a, you know, like what was a massive supermodel.
It's kind of like a Steven Tyler, Liv Tyler sort of situation.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. But anyway, so Bird with the Crystal Plumage. Very cool, man. Very, very, very,
very
cool. It's a great movie. So that's what you're seeing. So you're gonna have to wait to see Avengers till next week.
Yeah, I might catch it sometime midweek if I find a showing that's not completely sold out.
Yeah.
And I'm not a huge Marvel guy. I mean, I've been watching them since 2008.
You know,
I started with Iron Man and everything. But I was like, I'm going to let the big, big, big fans and the people who need to see it first.
Well, I mean, if you judge everything that was happening on my news feeds last night, everybody's going to see it. Because, I mean, they just started showing it last night. And it's going to be showing in some theaters for 72 hours straight. Some theaters are staying open all weekend long and showing it over and over and over and over again. When we do the box office on Monday, it's going to be ridiculous.
It's going to be a bloodbath, a total barn burner.
It's going to be ridiculous. It's going to be ridiculous.
And a reminder to everybody, please be kind to your local theater workers. They are working very, very hard this weekend.
As a person who has firsthand experience being a part of Avengers openings in the past.
Yes.
This is going to be insane. And also, no spoilers, people. Just be cool. I mean, I don't even think we should have to say that, but we do. Just be cool. Don't go online and spoil it for anybody, man. You know, my folks and I are seeing it tomorrow. We're seeing it Saturday afternoon, and we're going to see it in the crazy 3D IMAX. So I'm very excited. I'm very excited. I'm not a big comic book Marvel guy, but I enjoy many of the Marvel movies.
Yeah, there's a lot of good ones.
And I'm really looking forward. And everything I hear about this movie is great. The buzz on this is just fantastic. So some people have said it's the fastest 3 hours that they've ever sat through. So, which is nice. For me, the fastest 3 hours that I've ever sat through is Magnolia, but that's just me. And I'm in the minority on that one. All right. In the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Vic, who doesn't care anything about the Avengers.
Nope.
How you guys doing?
Oh, man. It is insane, though. Between Game of Thrones and Avengers, that's all in the entertainment world. It's been dominating that for the past, few weeks.
Indication of how far behind I am. I'm on season one, episode two
of Game of Thrones.
Sometime this weekend.
I didn't make it through the first season. I'm one of those. I know I'm in the minority. I gave up three quarters of the way through the first season of Game of Thrones because I just was like, I don't know what the hell's going on.
How many episodes did you get into? Do you remember?
No,
halfway. You said
six, seven, maybe.
Okay. I watched the first one and then decided not for me. Andrea told me, it took me three or four, so I'm going to give it a try.
Yeah, I don't know. It didn't last for me. I couldn't get it. I tried. but I just couldn't do it. So anyway, you got plans for the weekend, Vic?
The only thing that's popping out in my mind is we talked about going to this place in the, I think it's in the South Loop called The Scout, and it looks really cool. We checked out their Instagram page, and we want to go check that out. It's like a lunch place.
Oh, okay.
We got to do that, and then Sunday we're going to go to the North Side. There's a really nice, boy, I sound like Will Ferrell and... I'm going to do a little Bed Bath & Beyond. I don't know.
Old school?
Yeah, old school. Because we're going to some flower shop on the north side. Really, really excited about that.
Wow. All right.
That's it.
I like it. I will say this, as far as weekend stuff goes, I really enjoy it when the Cubs are on the West Coast because I'm a night owl. And I like it when they have the night games, especially like tonight and tomorrow. Those are late games. And yeah. I enjoy that. I enjoy a late West Coast game.
Me too. I'm definitely going to watch tonight.
Yeah. So, and the reason I also enjoy that on a Saturday night is because Saturday Night Live is a rerun, so I don't have to worry about watching that. This is how I party on Saturdays. I watch Svengoolie and then I usually watch SNL. That's how I party.
Wild man.
But it's going to be, I get to watch Svengoolie all the way through, and he's showing The Blob. Showing The Blob tomorrow night. The original Blob, first movie that Steve McQueen ever starred in. And then I can follow that up with a Cub game. So two of my favorite things in the world, Rich Coe's and the Cubs.
Awesome.
Follow that. That will be after I see Avengers. So it's a full. That's a full entertainment spectrum right there. So, all right. Well, Vic's in the newsroom. Tom is producing. We have to take a break. When we come back, Amy Peterson is going to join us, the co-founder and CEO of Rebel Now. We'll tell you all about that organization and what they've done for women in Detroit and everywhere. And we'll do that right after this. So I can tell you where in Dazed and Confused this song plays. It's during the party at the Moon Tower, and it's right when Parker Posey is doing the beer bong. I can tell you when every song in Dazed and Confused is played. I can give you the exact moment.
I hope so.
Yeah. I'm such a loser. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, a really interesting and cool organization called Rebel Nell. Helps struggling women to find and retain employment through creative means. And the co-founder and CEO is Amy Peterson, and she joins us now to talk about that organization. Amy, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. First of all, tell me about yourself. Where are you from and all that cool stuff?
I was actually born and raised in Jamestown, New York, and I moved to Detroit to pursue my dream of working in the sports industry. And did that for 11 years and then took this leap of faith to go run a company I had started 6 years ago called Rebel Nell that provides employment to women who are transitioning out of homelessness.
That's fantastic. That's really, really great. Now, listen, you also played rugby.
I did play rugby, yes.
Do you watch rugby regularly? Do you ever get to go out and play anymore?
I wish I had the body of a younger rugby player. I would certainly be out there playing a lot more. It's a brutal sport, but I still think it's one of the best sports out there that doesn't get enough attention.
Oh, I agree. But I could never be able to play. When I watch that game, I'm just like, oh my God, it's a rough sport.
Absolutely.
Did you get injured often?
Yeah, I had a couple surgeries, several concussions.
Whoa.
Wow.
So listen, you worked with the Detroit Tigers for a while, and you also were part of the initiative Rise. Tell me about that or that organization and how you worked with them.
Yeah, I had a great time with the Tigers. Actually, was associate counsel for them for a period of time and then went to work for the Ross Initiative in Sports for Equality, which is dedicated to improving lives through sports and just really working on diversity issues and how we can improve it through the game of sports.
That must have been gratifying, yes?
Yeah, it was a great opportunity, and I think working there and kind of finally making my way over into the social sector is what really, really encouraged me to take the leap of faith to go full-time over to Rebel Now.
Well, tell me about Rebel Now, how it started and the inspiration for it.
Yeah, Rebel Mel started. I was living right next door to a well-known shelter in Detroit. While I had my job with the Tigers, and I would have conversations with the residents. And these were incredible women who left challenging situations in search of a better opportunity, not only for themselves but for their family. And the idea came about, and this was in Detroit, you know, right when the last recession was happening, is what if I could create a company that would teach a woman to fish? You know, what would that look like, where we could not only provide employment, but then all of the wraparound support that they needed to transition into an independent life? And, you know, this idea for Rebel Mel was born. We didn't know what we were going to make that we could sell. I went running one day and saw some graffiti that had fallen on the ground. I thought, wow, that could be really cool. And then the concept was born to take that fallen piece of graffiti and turn it into wearable art and create jobs for the women that we wanted to employ out of the shelter.
And where does the name Rebel Mel come from?
Yeah, it's actually a tribute to trailblazing woman who came before us, whose ideas we really wanted to emulate. My business partner and I have a strong affinity for Eleanor Roosevelt and everything she stood for. And her nickname that her dad gave her was Little Nell. We thought she was deserving of a stronger nickname, and that's how we got Rebel Nell. We also think the women we are employing are really rebelling against what life has dealt to them. Plus, we're dealing with, you know, graffiti, which is considered a rebellious art form. Yeah. So it all worked well, and that's how we got Rebel Nell.
That's a great story and a great name. I really think it's really awesome and crazy that you thought, hey, this graffiti paint, this stuff that's fallen on the ground, we could make art out of that. And I would never have thought that direction. You know,
I have to laugh because I wake up some days and I'm like, I cannot believe this is what I'm doing now, and to take a crazy concept and to turn into this full-fledged business. And never in a million years thought this is what I would be doing, but it's one of the most rewarding and gratifying jobs I've ever had in my life.
That's fantastic. Congratulations. Amy, hang on, because we're going to take a break. We got the news, and after the news, I want to tell everybody about the pop-up shop, what's going on in Chicago, and about the art itself, okay?
Sounds great.
Okay, cool. Amy Peterson is with us. She is the co-founder and CEO of Rebel Nell. We'll tell you more about it and more about the art that you can buy, the jewelry that you can buy as well. That's all coming up after the news, which is next. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on WGN. We're here until 5 a.m. Coming up, we're going to talk with John Warzak, who is the festival organizer for the Chicago Zine Fest, which is happening in May. We'll give you all the details on that. All of our regular Friday features, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, and Fly Jams Friday are coming up, and we're going to talk about some of the biggest movie bombs of all time. That's all coming up. If you want to be a part of the show, talk or text 312-981-7200. It's also where you get your Fly Jam requests going. And we'll do that a little bit later on. Joining me right now, though, is Amy Peterson. She is the co-founder and CEO of Rebel Nell, which is a unique organization that helps struggling women to find and retain employment. And they do it. They provide help. They become creative designers. They are taught to craft unique wearable art from fallen layers of graffiti, which is a very interesting and original way to do it. And Amy, welcome back.
Thanks so much.
Hey, so tell me the nuts and bolts on how you actually got it started. I know the influence and why you wanted to do it, but how did you go about getting it going? And was it a hard thing to do?
Actually, it was really challenging. And just really understanding and navigating the waters of how to start a business and what does it look like and is your idea totally crazy? We did a couple local pitch competitions and the community voted on us and thought that they were a great investment for their dollars, and that was not only helpful financially but also just...
Did we lose Amy? Are you there, Amy? Oh, hold on. Let me put Amy on hold. We'll find out what's going on. All right. Having a little phone issue here. We'll figure it out and we'll get it all fixed. Amy Peterson is my guest, and you can check out RebelNell.com. That's RebelNell, N-E-L-L.com. And we also have a link on our Facebook page as well that'll take you directly there. There's going to be a pop-up store where they're going to sell. The pop-up shop is going to be open from April 26th to 27th from 12:30 p.m. to 7 p.m., and that's at Chicago Trueborn. On 1741 West Chicago Avenue. We'll give you more details on that. We lost Amy, but I think she's back. Amy, you back?
I'm back. Sorry about that.
No, that's okay. That's good. So we were talking about how it was a challenge to get the thing started off its feet.
Yeah, it certainly was, and just to learn how to run a business and what does that look like and how do you do it and where it's really thoughtful, not only providing a good quality product for the customers, but also thoughtful for your employees and understanding what resources do they need and how do we tackle it and then making all the mistakes that early entrepreneurs do. You know, we made every mistake in the book and continue to learn and grow and hope you don't make that mistake again.
Yeah. And so how do women get involved in this if they want to be a part of it, the women who are struggling to have an income and a home?
Yeah. So we work really closely with the shelters that we provide the employment opportunities for their women. And it's really the close connections that we have with the caseworkers inside the shelters. And they really identify women who are ready for this type of transitional employment opportunity. And we don't do a background check. We don't think that's important. We just look for three things. Do you have a desire to change your situation, a willingness to work with others, and are willing to learn? And if you have those three things, you would make a great candidate for RebelNell.
And then what's the next step? How do you give them, you know, how do you teach them to do the craft and all of that stuff? How does that work out?
Yeah, no skills are required whatsoever. We teach you everything on the job, so it's really kind of workforce development that we will not only provide the employment but all the training that you need to make these, to learn how to make these beautiful pieces of one-of-a-kind wearable art will all be done in-house.
And so how many people are working how many artists are working or how many people are working to help these women?
Well, there's about 10 of us full-time, and you know, that number is even amazing for me to say as we started out, you know, making the product for the first time ever in our apartments.
Yeah.
And so now we've just hired our 22nd woman out of the shelter, and you know, with each woman, it's bringing on a family member and a significant milestone for us and the company. And so it's really a collaborative and family-like environment to help everyone achieve their highest potential.
That's got to be that's really sounds great. Now, these art pieces, this jewelry, this wearable art is available, right? On the people can get it on the website, but also now it's going to be available in Chicago at a pop-up store.
Yeah, we're really, really excited. You can certainly visit our website, rebelmel.com, but also we'll be at Chicago Trueborn Friday and Saturday from 12 to 7, and you can come out and we're launching our very first collection of jewelry made actually from graffiti that we collected here in Chicago over the years. So we're so excited to launch that here, and it's a great time to come out and get maybe think about a Mother's Day gift, a gift that certainly has impact.
Yeah.
And then a portion of the proceeds will benefit Deborah's Place, which is a local organization who helps women as well.
Now, were the women who created this this art, were they from Chicago or Detroit?
They're from Detroit. So
okay.
We still had a manufacturer in Detroit, and I dream of one day where we grow to a point where our first city to actually launch another production facility will be here in Chicago, and I look forward to that day.
Oh, that would be, that's fantastic. So again, the RebelNell pop-up shop where you can get this beautiful wearable art is today and tomorrow from noon to 7 p.m. at Chicago Trueborn at 1741 West Chicago Avenue right here in the city. That sounds great. Now, are some of the women from who design these things, are they in town as well for this?
I wish they could be. Unfortunately, with a lot of schedules and so many are single moms, that getting away can be challenging at times.
Yeah.
But we're hoping that we can continue to come back to Chicago and continue to spread the love, and then we can bring them back and maybe get them lined up for a few interviews because they can share their really powerful story and message.
Yeah. Well, it's a great story. Now, you know, you have over 20 women who have moved out of homeless shelters because of the work that they've done with Rebel Nell. That's got to be really incredibly gratifying to you, right?
It's amazing. And one of those moments when you just need to pause and reflect, because I think we're so busy getting caught up in the grind and thinking about, you know, how much impact we still have to make. And so, yeah, to even think of when we hired our first woman and all of the greatness that has come from watching her blossom, and now we've just hired her 22nd. Mm. It's amazing. It really, truly is.
That's really great. And how are the pieces made? Like, when we can get a little technical on that, how are they done?
They're really fun, and they're so psychedelic-looking, and each piece is totally one of a kind, not only because of the cross-section of graffiti, but also the woman who made it. But we will go, we have a really strict policy where we actually don't take any paint that's on the wall currently. We pick it up off the ground once it falls off as a result of the layers of Mother Nature, and we'll just pick it up, and then we bring it back to the studio, and we take it through a special process to really reveal all the layers and kind of expose the history of that particular piece of graffiti. And then from there, the women have complete creative freedom to cut whatever color patterns and shapes speak to them. It's then put onto a metal, whatever metal we're using for that piece. Most of our product is made of sterling silver. And then we put a protective resin on top to really enhance the colors and bring out all the uniqueness of the piece and to preserve the layers of paint. And then we chain it, and hopefully out the door it goes to a customer who's going to love it as much as we did.
Well, I was browsing through their website earlier this morning, and there's some really incredibly beautiful and original-looking stuff there. There's so many beautiful things on this on the website.
Yeah, thanks. And it's really fun to see the women's visions come to life and that they can have a voice through each piece is a really powerful thing and part of the process for them to go through and to see their confidence build with each piece that they make is great.
Yeah. And again, if people can't make it to the pop-up today and tomorrow, and again, it's at the Chicago Trueborn, which is 1741 West Chicago from noon to 7 p.m. today and tomorrow, where you can get the Rebel Nell pop-up shop and you can get all these incredible wearable pieces of art. You can go to the website 24/7 and check it out there at rebelnell.com. That's N-E-L-L, rebelnell.com for more information. Have you done any pop-ups in any other cities, or is Chicago the first one?
Chicago's our very first, where we're putting in so much effort and having an actual collection from the city. So it's really an honor to be here, and we love Chicago as being a sister city in the Midwest for us. So this is really cool.
Now, what was it that when you were in Chicago, so were you on a trip in Chicago and you thought, you know what, let's do some graffiti from there? Or was it just because of the city itself, or did it just come upon you one day when you were here?
That's actually a great question. We had kind of dreamed of expanding and didn't really know what that looked like or how could we take our impact on the road. And one day we were at the shop and got a letter, like a sizable package in the mail. And sure enough, we opened it, and it was this giant chunk of graffiti from one of our customers, and kind of a fan, a person who's bought pieces from us in the past, and said, hey, I was out walking in Chicago in my neighborhood, and I stumbled upon this chunk. I thought you guys would appreciate it.
Oh, cool.
Keep doing all the great work. And then we were like, this is it. This is our aha moment. And then we really reached out to our followers, on Instagram and Facebook, and said, hey guys, we're looking to expand our reach and we'd love to have a collection in the Windy City. If you guys are out and you see anything, send it to us. And it was amazing, the feedback and how many packages we received from just fans out there sourcing it for us.
Yeah. God, I love my city. I got to tell you, yeah. Amy, I really do. Do you know what neighborhood that first package came from?
It came from the Westtown area.
Okay. Excellent. And now, did you get graffiti from all over, all parts of the city?
Most of it has come from the West Town. We decided to kind of concentrate over here.
Okay.
We would love to get it from more places, but we know that most of it has come from the West Town area.
Okay. Well, I love what you've done here. I think this is great. And I'm so glad that Chicago was your first choice and that we did such a good job helping you out. And let's get a bunch of people to come out today and tomorrow to buy some of this art and to take a look at it. The Rebel Nail pop-up shop is today from noon to 7 p.m. at Chicago Trueborn, 1741 West Chicago Avenue. Support this great organization that helps struggling women get out of homeless shelters and get jobs and be creative and get back up on their feet. It's a fantastic organization. So help them out. Get to your Rebel Nail pop-up shop today, noon to 7. Tomorrow, noon to 7 at Chicago Trueborn, 1741 West Chicago. You can't make it out to the pop-up. Go to rebelnail.com right now. Take a look at all that beautiful jewelry and art and buy some. Amy, congratulations. I really admire what you've done here, and I thank you for being on the show, and I hope you have a ton of people today and tomorrow.
Thank you so much. It was an honor.
Okay, take care. There you go. Amy Peterson. That's very inspiring and very, very cool. So get out to that pop-up. Get some art, buy some jewelry, and you're helping out an incredible organization that helps out a lot of struggling women. It's very inspirational. So the pop-up shop is today from noon to 7, tomorrow from noon to 7 at Chicago Trueborn, 1741 West Chicago. You can also go to rebelnell.com right now, order your art, order your jewelry, and we have a link on our Facebook page, too. Facebook.com/NickDShow. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back right after this. Sister, can you hear me now? Hey, look at that. Tom picking my favorite song of all time. It's Buffalo Tom, one of my favorite bands ever, and that song, I can't tell you. Somebody dumped. Oh, you know who dumped me? It's a different girl. A girl dumped me right when that record came out, when Let Me Come Over came out. And I can't tell you the number of times I've listened to that song all night, just on repeat. Like, because my heart was broken. So I would listen to Tail Lights Fade, sit on my couch, drink, and listen to Tail Lights Fade over and over and over again. And actually, you saw the vinyl shop. I actually included that.
Yep. It's almost like it's of significance to you in some sort of way.
Some weird way, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know why. But, yeah, so I love that song. Welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here until 5 p.m. And coming up, 5 p.m.? Boy, that would be a long shift. Longer than the Avengers. It's 5 a.m. It's 5 a.m. Got to get some sleep. Coming up, though, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. So we're about to talk after the news. We're going to talk with the guy who organizes a festival, the Chicago Zine Fest. But there's another festival that I want to talk about that I find to be very important. Keanu Reeves is getting his own film festival, and it's about damn time. And by the way, I can't even explain to you how excited I am for two movies in May. One, of course, being Godzilla, which is going to be the greatest movie ever made in the history of all movies.
Yes.
And I cannot wait to
Underline.
See it. Ghidorah, Rodan, Mothra, and the King. Please. And Eleven is in it, too. And she's awesome. So I can't wait to see that. But man, that John Wick movie. Good Lord.
I can't believe the stakes they're raising it to.
I can't. Horseback, guys on motorcycle. It's just, I can't. Those movies are so damn good. I mean, I love them. And again, came out of nowhere. Like that first John Wick movie, I was like, what the hell is this? And it was phenomenal. Do not mess with John Wick's dog. That's all I'm saying.
Never. It's the perfect cure for shaky cam action. These guys shoot action in a way that is so satisfying.
And also, you know, I mean, it led to about 2/3 of Atomic Blonde was great. I mean, it wasn't as good as the John Wick movies, but that fight scene in the hallway on the stairwell.
So cool.
Oh my God. And I was never a big fan. I got to say, I was never a big fan of Charlize Theron at all. Until Fury Road, until she became Furiosa. And then I was like, oh, now I love her. And then I thought she was great in Atomic Blonde. I just love that she kicks ass like that. And I'm actually excited to see her as the love interest for Seth Rogen.
It looks great.
It looks really good. Anyway, Keanu Reeves is getting his own film festival to celebrate four decades of his big screen career, including two of his most iconic roles, John Wick and Ted Theodore Logan III. We don't know what the greatest word in the English language was before, but we now know it's KeanuCon. Late in April, fans of the action star will come together to honor his long career thanks to the first-of-its-kind festival dedicated entirely to a man who made the word whoa iconic. The event is being put together by Matchbox Cine Club, an independent exhibitor for cine outcasts, orphans, and outliers at the Center for Contemporary Art in Glasgow, Scotland. Oh, it's in your native land.
Yes.
For 2 days on the weekend of April 20th, this weekend. This weekend in Glasgow, if you're out there in Scotland, you can see it. And Keanu Khan, that's just lovely.
What do you think flights are like right now?
Yeah, I know, that's the thing, man.
Do a hop, skip, and a jump.
Get over there, man. Watch some movies. Or if at the very least, if you can't be there, just pop some of these movies into your DVD player or your Blu-ray. The slate will feature a wide range of Keanu's movies, including 1987's One Step Away, or 1985's One Step Away, and some of his most famous titles. And his most recent film, which will end the festival, was with Winona Ryder and Destination Wedding, which I've not seen.
It's okay. It's good.
Okay. They're being, reunited after Dracula?
Yeah.
They were both in Dracula.
But they, unfortunately, are not showing Dracula.
They're not showing Dracula. I don't like that movie. I'm like
No one likes that movie.
No.
It's not very good, but Keanu is great.
I like some of the... I actually admired what Coppola did in terms of cinematic tricks, because he went old school.
Yeah.
You know, I admired what he did with the camera. I just didn't like the movie.
Yeah. Oldman's great in it.
Yeah, it just doesn't work for me at all. The question is whether we'd want to attend Keanu Khan. The question is, why haven't we had one before? Yeah, that's a good question. You can purchase your tickets through Matchbox Cine Club's website. The two-day lineup, which sadly does not include... Whoa. They're not showing Point Break?
I'm guessing the rights were too expensive.
Oh, come on, man. You can't have a Keanu Fest if you're not going to show Point Break.
To be fair, it is the first Keanu Con.
Who knows? That's true. That's true.
Here's
what they're showing. From 1985, One Step Away, which I've not seen. Permanent Record, which is a terrific movie. My Own Private Idaho. Wait, so also they're not showing River's Edge? Now I'm starting to get a little angry. I'm getting a little angry now. Permanent Record, which is a terrific movie. My Own Private Idaho goes without saying. Speed, The Matrix, John Wick, the original. Man of Tai Chi, Keanu Reeves' directorial debut, which is actually a really good movie. Constantine, I back that movie. I don't care. I back Constantine. Let's see. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, and then they're going to have the Wild Stallions live, and then closing it out will be Destination Wedding. I have to say, though, that the non-inclusion of Point Break, and I think also River's Edge, is, I don't know. Maybe they had difficulty. They must have had difficulty getting the rights, especially to Point Break. I would imagine. But yeah, I mean, River's Edge. I mean, Permanent Record is a. Have you seen Permanent Record?
I have not.
It's a really good movie. Mm-hmm. Keanu's really good in it.
I was kind of hoping they would have Chain Reaction.
Yeah, shot here, right here in Chicago. Well, I would pick. You know, hell, I'd pick Lake House. I don't. You know, that's how much I like Keanu.
The greatest love story ever told.
Yeah, but one of the only ones that I would never pick would be because I hated the remake of the Day the Earth Stood Still. I thought that was terrible. And normally I back everything Keanu does, but I can't back that one. All right, well there you go, Keanu Khan. Get to Glasgow as soon as possible. Get your tickets now. I think that's great. I think they should have more Keanu Cons. We should have one here in Chicago. Maybe we should organize one influenced by the people of Scotland.
I'll give them a call.
Let's do that. All right, we got a break. The news is coming up next, and then John Warzak from the Chicago Zine Fest is going to join us after the news, which is coming up next. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Friday morning. That means all of our regular features are coming up. Fly Jams, Friday, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show, Spies, and You Big Dummy, all coming up a little bit later on. We are also going to talk about some of the most notorious and massive movie bombs in history and tell you some of the stories behind how those happened. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. You can also text us at the same number, 312-981-7200. And later on, that's the number to text in or call in for your Fly Jam requests. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Stay connected on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show as well. All right. Fun event coming up in May, and we're telling you all about it now. It is the Chicago Zine Fest. And it is a celebration of the small press and independent publishers of zines. And if you don't know what a zine is, well, we're going to give you the whole history of it, tell you what it is, and tell you all about the fest. The dates for the Chicago Zine Fest, or CZF, is May 16th, 17th, and 18th. All the events are free and open to the public, and we'll get all the information about it, where it takes place, who can be a part of it, and all that cool stuff for this fun organization, because we're going to talk about we're going to talk with the festival organizer of the Chicago Zine Fest, and that's John Warzak. And let's welcome John to the show. John, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, first of all, tell everybody, if people who might not know, exactly what a zine is, and it's spelled Z-I-N-E. So tell everybody what that is.
So it's a self-published piece of art, kind of like a little art book, if you will, kind of taking control of putting out your own fiction, poetry, self-help, self-care, you know, comics, you know, anything that kind of could be in print, except this is a DIY version of that where you kind of take control of it. It's an accessible form, so you design it, you come up with the content, you come up with the size, et cetera, and you make it happen. And the festival showcases artists that do just that.
And it's interesting because, I mean, fanzines have been around for a really, really, really long time. And a lot of things that have become very successful and become actual magazines or websites started out as fanzines. That's true, isn't it?
Yeah, no, that's very true. And even a lot of the creators of zines, they've gone on to, you know, publish their be published authors. They've worked, you know, went on to be editors, you know, at magazines to run their own small press, et cetera. So, you know, there's a lot of history behind it. And, something that's brand new.
I want to talk about the history of it in a little bit, but I do want to ask you this question. The first thing that really pops into my head is, are fanzines still... I mean, are they still as popular as they used to be because of all the content on the internet and because of what people do on the web as opposed to print? You know what I mean? But fanzines are still vital.
So now that's the kind of thing that, you know, always comes up. And the interesting part about that is, one, being it's an accessible form, you know, you don't have to have any kind of special tools or skills or anything. You can just say, hey, I've got an idea, I've got some paper, I can go and copy it, and there it is. So in that sense, you don't have to learn how to use, you know, Adobe programs or learn how to build a website or all that stuff. So in that one sense, like, yes, it's popular because, you know, we have a lot of youth zine creators who just jump in and making stuff for the first time who will be at the festival. And then we have, you know, a lot of people who have been making long-term commitments to doing stuff like this because, again, they're able to have it in their hands and, you know, make it themselves and not kind of go through any specific means to do that. And the other thing that we find very interesting, too, and we see this with, you know, a Record Store Day and your Trip Record Fair and things like that, is, you know, there's the vinyl, the cassette, you know, like there's a lot of, like, the analog out there.
Yeah.
And zines are kind of like the print analog of that. And it's just, you know, a lot of people are into making and doing with their hands again, as well as, like, having a physical object, you know, in a digital world. We're living online. We're living on our phones. But yet, when you are able to be handed something by someone who made it, it just kind of opens a completely different, you know, scope to someone who, you know, maybe not have thought about doing something like that themselves. So, yeah, that's kind of like, you know, what we see the kind of the popularity of it is, you know, something along those terms of just being accessible and kind of being like the adverse to, you know, living in this digital culture.
Yeah, I'm a fan of that. So I love the fact that, you know, the old saying, everything old is new again. I really love that. I love that vinyl has a resurgence in popularity. And I am a fan of actually reading a book I want to have the book in my hand when I'm reading it, sure. So I can physically turn the page and I can smell the book, because I smell the books when I read them. And as far as albums go, it's an entirely different experience. They have something tangible in your hand. You can look at the liner notes. You can look at that. Yep. I just think it's great. And I love the fact that zines are still happening. And I think that's really cool.
And again, like I said, so the, you know, this year marks the 10-year anniversary of us as a festival. So the cool thing of that is, you know, if this was something that was fleeting or, you know, had waning interest, we probably wouldn't be around for 10 years.
Exactly.
And each year, yeah, each year we sell out tables. We have, you know, over 200 exhibitors. So that's, you know, 200, you know, plus people making, you know, artwork themselves. So again, there's, you know, it's not just a small kind of niche, you know, thing that, you know, a handful of people are doing.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, just we're really fortunate, you know, because of that, because again, you know, like as you're saying, you know, people, you know, it's very easy to not, you know, to tune out and just, you know, go with what's, you know, accessible at their hands, at their fingertips, instead
right.
of making and picking something up, like you said, and like wanting to smell it, wanting to touch it, wanting to dig a little deeper. So, yeah that's the...
The other thing about zines that's amazing to me is that you could take any topic and make a zine out of it. It covers everything. I mean, it's politics and fan fiction. I mean, everything. You can make a zine out of it. What are some of your favorites, or what are some good examples of zines that are out there that you like?
Yeah, so one of the, you know, Chicago is very fortunate to have a lot of resources at our disposal. And one of the, you know, best resources, you know, not just in Chicago, but in the nation, is Quimby's Bookstore. It's on North Avenue
sure.
in Wicker Park.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and you walk in there and you can just, like you said, any kind of topic you can think of, whether it's like, you know, like I mentioned earlier, like self-care, do-it-yourself, gardening, you know, fixing a bike to, you know, someone's... you know, mini comic about, you know, their daily life, or, you know, battling some, you know, some hardship with their family, you know, whether it's an illness or something. So it's just kind of interesting to see, like, the topics people put into this. So, yeah, there's some real fun ones, you know, out there. It's kind of hard to pick, you know, one without alienating some.
Sure,
you know,
but, right, sure.
So I don't want to kind of to mention that, but I would just like say, yeah, like, you know, the festival is like a microcosm of what's out there. But yeah, going to a place like Quimby's, it just, you know, you can see anything from, like, you know, Doors by Cindy Crabb, or, you know, Comic Bus by Aaron Comic Bus, or, you know, a lot of these, you know, zines that have been around for a while. And then, like, then the great part about Quimby's is too, is there's a lot of local. So, you know, there's a lot of fun stuff locally that, you know, you can see happening. And it's really cool that, you know, maybe it's someone's first issue, and then maybe, you know, a couple, you know, years later, they're still making it, and you kind of can see the growth in that person's writing and their design. So that's another cool thing, too, about this. It's, you know, it's not a vehicle that has to be a specific set way. So like I mentioned, it's an accessible art form, so anyone, any age can do it. And that's the cool thing about, you know, you know, being able to just, you know, say, hey, I want to do it. I want to make my own mini comic, my own zine, and just go for it.
Do we know where the first zines were done, like the history of zines? Where did that happen?
So, you know, they kind of go back and forth, like the current state of zines being, like, really tied to, like, riot girl and punk rock, you know, like, as you mentioned earlier, fanzines, hey, you know, I'm putting out, you know, punk, you know, by Legs McNeil, things like that, you know, and then, you know, go further back to, there's an issue of a zine called The Comet, which was like a science fiction fanzine, which was basically, you know, before there was, print publications for, you know, things like that. People were like, just, hey, we're a small group. We want to, like, write letters to each other. We want to put out our own fan fiction, our own, you know, reviews of science fiction things. And, you know, they just started printing their own stuff. So I think that may have been, don't want to quote me on this, but, you know, clearly, like, 50, 60 years, you know.
Yeah.
Ago. And again, that's where, you know, we've seen, you know, people just have the motivation to do something, get it out there. And, you know, you could even say, you know, hey, people were printing, you know, pamphlets on a Gutenberg press, you know, hundreds of years ago. So, you know, I think it's just the idea of, I have something that I can control that I want to get out there, and I'm going to just do it.
Yeah.
So yeah, so like the history is, you know, like tied into a lot of different things, you know, but, you know, the current state of where we're at is, like, I think, you know, touching on earlier, it's like, hey, you know, I don't want to create a blog, or I don't want to just keep posting, you know, tweets. I just want to be able to create something new. And I think that's we don't have, like, a direct, you know, family tree of, you know, where do we get there from here. It's just, I think, hey, it's something that's just, you know, a way to just get your voice out there quick. So
right.
I think that's the thing that's always I carried it.
Okay. All right, John, we're going to take a quick break, okay? When we come back, I want to talk all about the fest and what's going on and how people can go and all that cool stuff. So hang on, okay?
Yep.
All right, John Warzak is with us. He is the festival organizer for the Chicago Zine Fest, which is happening May 16th through the 18th. The events are all free. It's open to the public to attend, and you can check out Chicago Zine Fest. That's Z-I-N-E, chicagozinefest.org. And you can follow him on Twitter, at Chicago Zine Fest. Again, that's Z-I-N-E. And we have a link on our Facebook page as well, at facebook.com/NickDShow. More festival talk with John after we take a break here on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are back and live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive on this Friday. And it is Friday, which means Fly Jams Friday. A little bit later on, we got You Big Dummy coming up, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, much more. And we are going to talk about some of the biggest movie bombs of all time and some of the stories behind why those movies bombed. And some of them are really surprising, because some of them have gone on to be like really revered and loved movies, but they started out as bombs. So that's all coming up. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page at facebook.com/NickDShow. Hey, coming up in May 16th, 17th, and 18th is the Chicago Zine Fest, which is a showcase and a celebration of small press and independent publishers from all over the place. And the organizer of that festival is John Warzak, and he joins us to talk all about it. Welcome back, John.
Hey, thanks, Nick.
All right, man. Hey, so what's your personal connection to zines? Have you done some?
Yeah, so I've been probably making zines for over, you know, the Zine Fest has been around a decade. Kind of making them a little bit before that. Dabbled in running a nonprofit space that kind of catered to our community and like let, you know, people come and make zines. Have, you know, hosted reading series before that like allows people who, you know, self-publish, whether they're, you know, students or zinesters or comics makers or, you know, authors who self-publish, you know, their own books, you know, reading series that allows people to get up and share stuff. So my that kind of, you know, path to zines and Zine Fest has kind of been a mixed one. But, yeah, it's always been a fun thing that's kept me motivated for, yeah, you know, the last decade.
What's the Chicago zine community like? Tell me a little bit about that, John.
So I think I was touching on it earlier that, you know, we're really fortunate to have Quimby's Bookstore,
sure,
in Chicago.
Yeah.
And, again, you know, there's a lot of great resources like, you know, Sputnik Press and the Read Write Library, you know, that places where you can kind of do and make things. Or you can go and share and, you know, be part of the community. So we're, you know, we, as a bigger city, we've got a lot of outlets to physically do that. And there's a lot of great, you know, events like a Meanwhile reading series, which, you know, showcases, you know, people who make zines and comics. And Zines Not Dead is another reading series that, you know, showcases, you know, people who are literally, you know, making and doing stuff and then getting up and reading it and sharing it with the public. So.
Yeah. All right, so the Zine Fest, the Chicago Zine Fest, celebrating its 10th year. Congratulations on that, by the way. And it is May 16th through the 18th. Tell me about all the events and what's happening and how people can participate and be a part of it and where it's happening and all that good stuff so people can go.
Sure. So, like, as you mentioned, the easiest way to find a lot about our information is going on our site, our website, you know, our chicagozinefest.org. But we've kind of expanded the programming, if you will, this year by adding that Thursday the 16th, we're partnering with our friends at DePaul Special Collections and Archives. Again, that's one more, you know, kind of cool thing we have in the city of Chicago is, you know, academic resources that collect zines and, you know, house them for research purposes and let students kind of use them for, you know, those kind of like learning opportunities. And, you know, we're working with them to open it to the public for an event on that Thursday. So we're having a, you know, archive tour. You can kind of see some of the stuff that's been, you know, collected over the years, and then having a panel discussion about zines, using zines as a, you know, social change and social justice work. Because, again, as you mentioned, you know, zines can be, the topic can be kind of about anything. And in this day and age, a lot of zany stuff happening, you know, social justice is a really, you know, hot topic and something that, you know, very meaningful for people who are, you know, wanting to just get their voices out there and get their, you know, expressions out. So we're going to have a panel discussion with a bunch of diverse folks who are chatting about that and kind of how they use zines as a way to kind of, you know, get their word out there. And, you know, and then Friday we're having some fun stuff. We are having a reading of people who make their own zines at Quimby's Bookstore, and then our friends at Cards Against Humanity are hosting. We're doing a mock Jeopardy show that's based around zines. So like we're going to have a couple special guests that are going to be panel contestants, and I'll be hosting myself, and we'll be doing some questions that all kind of tie into zines. So that should be a kind of a funny Jeopardy thing. And then of course Saturday is the actual exposition, where we'll have the 200-plus people at a Plumbers Union Hall just tabling and, you know, kind of selling and trading and, you know, interacting with the public, you know, so you can kind of see, like, what's out there and what people are making. And, yeah, so it's going to be a pretty busy weekend for us. But, yeah, that's kind of the name of the game, is celebrating something like this, and we want to kind of go all in. So again, the more information, you know, specific information about our guest and who's reading and, you know, locations and addresses and times and all the fun stuff, you know, on our website and things like that. But, you know, we're looking forward to having some fun for this 10-year.
Yeah, sounds great. And, again, people can get all the details and stuff at chicagozinefest.org. Chicago, Z-I-N-E. Chicagozinefest.org. Yeah. And, again, it's all free and open to the public to attend May 16th, 17th, and 18th. That is really cool. It's great because you can see, you know, with all these people doing these zines, you can see just how different everybody's artistic expression is. You know what I mean? And how they do it. And it's really kind of inspiring. Now, do you ever see younger people who show up at the fest just as observers? Then they come back and they started doing zines. Have you seen people being inspired by that?
Yeah, we definitely have, and that's kind of one of the reasons why we try to work with more youth organizations and just, kids in general, because last year we invited some select organizations to kind of come out and, you know, show what their students were doing, and this year keeping that door open, having them come back, and having new people be like, we were there last year, and we really want to get our students involved, or, you know, students are like asking our teachers, you know, hey, can we have field trips to come there and, you know, check stuff out. So that's really cool to see that it's, you know, something that's more like a learning experience. And, you know, for kids, it's not just something, you know, hey, I've got this funny idea that I want to put out there. It's just an empowering thing to be like, hey, I've got no one stopping me. I can make this and create this, and who knows what that kind of spawns when they're able to, you know, move up and forward, you know. So it's a very cool thing.
All right. Well, cool. Do you think one last question here? Do you think part of the allure of doing a zine is that in fact you have to answer to no one? Like you're your own boss. You don't have editors. You don't have to deal with any of that stuff. It's just freeing, right?
Yeah, so the funny thing about that, too, is you got that, and you got the flip side of that, which is, like, if you have no one pushing you, you're kind of like, that's okay.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So we end up seeing, and this is kind of like a funny, you know, kind of zine joke, is, you know, people will be printing and making and folding and copying, like, literally the night before. It's like, I got a mad rush to get this thing finished. And, again, you know, when you're holding everything, and, you know, in your own power, it's up to you. And, you know, as procrastinators, you know, human nature, you know, takes over, and it's like, oh, I've got all this cool stuff in the free city I live in, but I've got to get ready for this festival tomorrow. Oh, dang. And just, you know, trying to cram it all in. So that's, we kind of see both ends of that. Like, you're beholden to no one, but you're beholden to yourself. And if you're the kind of person who's just taking a back seat in life, you know, maybe that's you're not the, you know, fastest draw.
Yeah.
But then we also see, like, you know, people very prolific and putting out, you know, multiple zines a year because it's just something that they're, you know, they're into and they're motivated to get done. So yeah, that's a really cool freeing thing with this. That there's no bosses, no, you know, editors, no one that's breathing down your neck.
Right.
So kind of a cool thing, man.
Yeah. All right. Well, Jason, John, it was a pleasure talking to you. The Chicago Zine Fest is May 16th, 17th, and 18th. Lots of great events. All are free and open to the public. To get all the information, you can go to chicagozinefest.org. John, pleasure to talk to you, man. Have a great morning.
No, thanks, you too.
Okay, right, take care. There you go. John Warzak, everybody. Check out chicagozinefest.org for all the information. We have a link on our Facebook page as well at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, 18 stories above downtown Chicago here. We're here until 5 a.m. It is Friday, so that means all of our regular Friday features will be coming up in a little bit. And that, of course, includes You Big Dummy. That's where we read real news stories of real dumb people doing real dumb stuff, and then we vote on who's the biggest dummy. Tom will vote, I will vote, and then the first person who calls in, our listener, at 312-981-7200 will cast the third vote for You Big Dummy. We got Straight Outta Context. That's where you listen 24/7 to this radio station. Whenever anybody says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds a little dirty, jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And, of course, we have Nick D Show Spies. That's, again, where you listen 24/7 whenever anybody mentions me or the show in any capacity. We want to know about it. You become a spy. Jot down the day, the time, who said it. Again, send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And, of course, Fly Jams Friday, where DJ Luscious Hushes will appear to spin your requests. And if you've got any requests, get them in. We'll play them later on when Fly Jams Friday becomes Fly Jams Friday. So it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. So you played that music there is from a movie that bombed.
Yep.
But it's not a massive, notorious bomb as some of the ones that we're going to talk about. No. But that was Streets of Fire from Walter Hill's Streets of Fire, which is a movie that I love.
Spectacular.
And one of Willem Dafoe's first movies, back when Michael Perret was still a thing. And, of course, starring the exquisite Diane Lane, who, let me explain something to you, Tom. If you're a guy my age, because Diane Lane is my age. So she started making movies when she was a kid. So Diane Lane was the deal. Like when The Outsiders came out, and when especially Rumblefish, Rumblefish was like, oh. And yeah. And so I followed her career. I've always, she's always been one of my favorites, and I always had a crush on her. And then I remember when that Unfaithful movie came out. Oh, man. You know, it's not even that good a movie. I think it's good, but not great. But I saw it too many times just because of Diane Lane. So it was nice to see her come back, you know, like she had a nice that movie brought her back, and she's been doing really, really good stuff.
Yeah, now she's Ma Kent.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Which also makes me feel very old. So, yeah, all my contemporary women that are my age now are the older women in comic book movies. Because Marissa Tomei. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like when Sally Field went from being Tom Hanks' love interest to being Tom Hanks' mom.
Yeah. Yeah, even though, you know, obviously there was the age difference, but it didn't matter. But yeah. So that Streets of Fire unfairly bombed. And I mean, I Can Dream About You became a big smash hit for Dan Hartman.
I had no idea that was like originally from
Streets of Fire.
Because I mean, it played on my local radio station all the time.
Oh, it became a huge hit. I think the whole soundtrack's great.
Yeah,
I think the whole soundtrack.
It's insane how good that soundtrack is.
Yeah, and it's just such a great movie, and you know, original and fun. And you know what Walter Hill originally wanted to do with the Warriors, he did with this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, the whole comic books kind of style and the colors and the slashing across the screen and stuff like that. And then like when he went back and tweaked it into the Warriors, I just don't even acknowledge that version exists.
I did just watch it the other day.
I'm
at the point where it's tolerable.
Oh no. I watched it one time. I can't. The Warriors is a very special movie to me.
I imagine.
One of my favorite movies ever made. And, you know, you got to understand, if you're a 13-year-old boy and you see the Warriors on the big screen, that's a big deal. And when that movie came out, I remember my mom being really nervous that my dad was going to take me to see it because gang fights were breaking out in theaters.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I believe it.
Yeah. Like, gangbangers would go and see it. Like, you know, the gang problem, like, street gang issues and stuff like that were much bigger in the 70s than they are now. I mean, they still exist, obviously.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And they're, you know, ultra dangerous and things like that, but there were more of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were more street gangs. Like when I was growing up in the 70s in what is now called Wrigleyville or Lakeview, there were like five or six sort of notorious punk street gangs that were everywhere. in the city. The one that I remember the tags the most tags that I've seen. There was a Latin Kings. There were a lot more, but the one in my neighborhood that was like big was the Simon City Royals. Mm-hmm. The Simon City Royals were a big gang, and so when the Warriors came out, that was like at the height of that stuff. Because it came, I was 12 because it was early 1978. Because it came out like in, I think, in February or January of 1978. So I wasn't yet 13. I was 12. So, you know, my mom was like, "Oh no," because there actually there was one fight that broke out. I mean, there were. This was nationwide, mostly in New York, obviously, because where the film, you know, to take place in New York. But and the gang problem in New York was one of the worst. Outside of, you know, Detroit, Chicago, and that area, but way up there. But anyway, it was being reported nationwide, and then locally it happened. I remember there was a gang fight at a showing of the Warriors at the Lincoln Village Theater, which you probably don't even remember the Lincoln Village.
No.
Theater. Lincoln Village Theater was at it was on West Lincoln. I'm trying to think of the cross street where it was, but it was the Lincoln Village Mall. Near Peterson, Lincoln and Peterson. And that was the Lincoln Village Theater on the north side. And I remember they reported like a gang fight, which I don't think anybody was killed, but I know that there were injuries and arrests. And I saw it at this. My dad took me. We went downtown to the Loop, to the Grindhouse, and saw it at the State Lake. And I just remember loving every minute of it. I bought the soundtrack, and I used to listen to the soundtrack over and over and over again. And then when I heard, oh yeah, Walter Hill's got his sort of director's cut where he, you know, wanted to do these sort of comic book stylistic flourishes throughout the movie. And then when I saw, and I was excited, I was like, oh, okay. All right, cool. I'm excited about this. It's Walter Hill, he's the best. And then I saw the movie and I just, oh God. Like that comic book stuff, director's cut Warriors to me just doesn't work at all. And I was shocked that was really what Walter Hill originally wanted, because the movie that he originally released is fantastic. It's one of the best action fantasy movies ever made. And, yeah, so that was a little disappointing. And we played a little Streets of Fire, which turned out to be a bomb. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about historic bombs that bankrupted studios. And we also have a group of movies that were box office bombs, and you never would have guessed that they were bombs, considering how beloved they are now. And I've mentioned this one before. It's a Wonderful Life, which is, you know, obviously widely considered the most beloved Christmas movie of all time. It's watched every single year. It is now a classic that is watched every year during Christmas, but It's a Wonderful Life bombed when it came out. It got bad reviews, and historically, you look back at it, and I've read articles about the history of it, it almost ended Frank Capra's career. That was the movie that almost ended Frank Capra's career, and that's the case with a lot of bombs. You know, like some directors had to come back from that. Like, for instance, The Thing. John Carpenter's The Thing tanked when it came out. Like, I vividly remember it because I saw it about 100 times in the theater in the summer of 1982. The reviews were bad, and it was horrible. You know, everybody said it was horrible, and it didn't make any money, and it was a big-budgeted, you know, Universal picture. One of the first times he ever worked. It was actually the first time he ever worked with a studio, because Escape from New York, The Fog, Halloween, Assault, and Dark Star were all independently made. But so this was the first time he ever worked with a studio, and they lost a ton of money on it. It was almost the last time he ever worked with a studio. And now, of course, you look back and everybody thinks, you know, oh, The Thing, it's a masterpiece. Well, where the hell were you in 1982?
Sometimes it just takes time.
I wish. And that's the case with a lot of Carpenter movies. Big Trouble in Little China was a bomb when it came out. And, that was it all, you know, I mean, 20th Century Fox lost a ton of money on it. That's when he went back to his roots because of the bombing of Big Trouble in Little China, which is of course now considered a great movie and everybody loves it, and it's a classic, Jack Burton rules, and yeah, okay, where were you in 1986 when it came out? But it was so bad that Carpenter was like, screw it. And that's when he went back to his roots and independently made with a small production company. His next two movies were Prince of Darkness and They Live. And he went back to his roots, and that reignited him. There's no question about it. Those two movies are very important in Carpenter's filmography. That was when he took a break back, you know, from the big Hollywood stuff. I mean, like Prince of Darkness and They Live cost nothing to make, and they made money. Not so much Prince of Darkness, but They Live made a lot of money. And it got him back in, and he started working with, you know, he started working with studios again. And the thing was Starman was before Big Trouble. Starman was a big hit. And so everybody was like, oh, great. Big Trouble's going to be great. And they threw money at him. After the success of Starman, they threw money at him. And Big Trouble just went right into the toilet. Which, of course, is too bad because it's clearly a great movie. So, but yeah, Carpenter has a few of them. Has a few that
few
have,
big bombs.
Yeah, a few big bombs that are now considered great. He's got a few of them. We're talking about bombs. Here's Mark on WGNA, Mark.
Greetings from Cleveland.
Yes.
Okay, before I started on the flop movies, was Vince Vaughn saying that it's going to snow in Chicago?
Yes, it is. It's going to snow Saturday night.
Okay, Vince, I love you. But
it's Vic.
No,
it's Vic.
Snow is not allowed but, this late in
the
no,
but, Mark, it's Vic. Vince Vaughn has not fallen off the movie charts where he has to work on my show. Vince Vaughn is still making movies. He's not desperate enough to be on my show. I'll tell you.
Okay, I got his name wrong. He got the weather wrong.
Oh, yeah, well, I hope, but we'll see. Yeah. He's not a weatherman, by the way. He's just reporting it, so don't blame him. Blame Skilling.
Well, you got to blame someone.
Right.
Sorry,
Vic.
All right. Anyway, okay, I have two movies for you. Head, the Monkees movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one where they radically changed their image and made this really weird psychedelic plotless movie that was actually pretty great. I mean, no one was ready to accept it in 1968, but now it's a cult classic.
Right.
And also, The Secret of NIMH, Don Bluth's first animated movie. Okay, the studio didn't know how to handle it. It went up against E.T., but still, it made Bluth's reputation, and Steven Spielberg hired him, and his next few movies were hits, and there was even a sequel to NIMH that was done without him, so it was pretty bad. But anyway, it got a great reputation after it came out.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
It is.
Don Bluth is one of the best animators that ever lived. I love Don Bluth. His animation is spectacular, and The Secret of NIMH is a terrific movie.
Yeah, I mean, the quality of the actual movies and stories is kind of up and down, but yeah, The Secret of NIMH is, indisputable classic.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agree. Okay, thanks, Mark.
Great talking to you.
All right, take care.
Have a great show.
All right, thanks. Here's Craig on WGN. Hi, Craig.
Hey, good evening, Nick.
Yeah.
Good morning, whichever. I had just gotten out of the Academy, and Warriors broke in the theaters. And the first week, it was kind of, we thought it would die down, but it just got worse.
Mm-hmm.
Every punk with a bandana would tie it around his leg. Remember, they would tie it around their leg, right
above
their knee?
Absolutely.
Or they would put it around her head, or they would get into their mother's makeup so they could look like what was the Baseball Furies.
Baseball Furies, yep.
Or the Fifth Street Trumbles, or whatever they were.
Yeah.
You know, and they were coming into the theaters, and the drive-ins were the worst.
Yeah.
At least in the theater, you could keep them contained. But we were closing these places down and loading them up in school buses and taking them down and booking them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they all thought they were gangbangers, and it was the most incredible thing you saw.
Yeah.
I mean, these high school kids would come in here and they'd see this movie, and it's like, my God, Sigmund Freud would have a field day with this.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it became a sensation. I mean, and then the movie became a sensation too, as well. I mean, it was critically it was critically acclaimed, as well it should be.
Okay, but, I got one more quick thing. I'll let you get back.
Yeah, yeah.
When I was on hold, I was waiting. You were talking about The Thing.
Yeah.
Now the original one, you know who played the monster, right?
James Arness.
Okay. Do you know that one scene towards the end where he's walking down the hallway and they set him on fire?
Yeah.
If you look before they set him on fire, he's wearing Converse tennis shoes.
I'll have to look for that. I will have to look for that. Next time I watch that, I will. I will definitely look for that. All right, Craig. Thanks, man.
All right. Have a good night.
Take care. That's pretty cool. The Thing is wearing Converse. I'm wearing them right now. Maybe I'm the Thing. You don't know. You have to test my blood. See if it runs away from a hot needle. By the way, that's one of the greatest scenes in movie history. And it's funny, too, because there's a, like, and Tarantino has, like, the influence that the thing had on Hateful Eight is ridiculous. And awesome. Yeah. All the way down to them playing the music from the thing that wasn't in the movie that Morricone did for the thing. It's the scene, you know what I'm talking about, right, Tom?
Of course, yeah.
Where Kurt Russell starts spitting up blood and dying, and they're playing that they're playing the music that was cut from the actual thing, but used on the menu, the DVD menu, and I recognized it right away. Of course, we talked about this before because I would one of my favorite movies to watch when I would come home drunk was The Thing when I was a drinking man. Sometimes I'd fall asleep or pass out on the couch, and I'd wake up like an hour later, and that music was playing over and over again because the menu board came up because I wasn't watching the movie. So when that music started, when I was watching Hateful Eight, I went, oh, my God.
What's happening?
Yeah. So, all right, we got a break here. We're talking about bombs, movie bombs. We got some big ones here that actually bankrupted studios, and we also have some that it's shocking to think that they're bombs considering how much people love them now. And if you've got anything to jump in here, we would love to hear from you. Talk or text 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We'll be right back. Nice job, man. You know, it was funny. You weren't here when we had Matt on from the Horrorama, but we were talking about favorite horror movies, and he immediately went to In the Mouth of Madness. And I was like, cool, man. Cool.
That's a vibe.
Yeah. I'm quoted on the box of In the Mouth of Madness.
Yeah. I took the liberty to listen back to the whole interview.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. In the Mouth of Madness. What a great movie.
I still remember one time I was just like idly. I like to watch trailers on YouTube just for kicks.
Yeah, sure.
And get to Bubba Hotep. And then what do I see? The most important piece of American cinema. Yeah, yeah. Nick DiGilio, WGA.
I'm the first quote on the trailer. I'm also
no way.
I'm also mentioned and thanked on the commentary that Don did for mm-hmm. Bubba Hotep. So, yeah, because I was one of the first ones to champion it, because we debuted it at Flashback a year before it actually got a release.
Really?
Yeah. We debuted it 2002 at Flashback. It got a release in 2003. Yeah, and I got to, they basically rented out all of the theaters at the Landmark Century, and they got Bruce to come to town, and me and Eric Childress switched, you know, we had Bruce, and we would introduce Bruce. He would come in, do a Q&A with the audience, talk to them. They would start the movie, and then we'd escort Bruce to a different theater that was starting another showtime, and we did that all night. It was a Friday night. We did that all night, all the way up until the midnight shows. And in between, I remember we had like a couple of hours before one of the midnight shows, before like the last midnight show. And so we went down to Jake's, which is a bar right down the street from the Century. And I drank with Bruce Campbell. I did shots of tequila with Bruce Campbell, which was really amazing. And as soon as he went into Jake's, everybody went nuts. They were all like, "Ash!" And a lot of the people had already just seen the movie and went down, you know, because it was an all night thing. I think it was four separate movies that were rotating, and there were lines around the block to see Bubba Hotep, and that's when it premiered. So I had a real long history with it. Right from the beginning. That's why Don was so kind to put my quote right at the top. He let me know too. He's like, I can put your quote right at the top of the trailer, and I'm like, oh, thank you, man. Very cool. All right, we're talking about box office bombs and coming up the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Here's Matt on WGN. Hi, Matt.
Nick, Hi. It is an honor and a pleasure to talk to you, longtime listener.
Thank you.
First time caller that got through this time.
All right, good. Thanks.
Jaws the Revenge, otherwise known as Jaws 4.
Yeah.
It is one of the single funniest, greatest box office bombs I have ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah.
The shark roars. Ellen Brody has a telepathic communication link that plays the Jaws theme whenever the shark is near, and she can hear it. Because she senses the shark coming. You can see them push the shark out of the water on a pole whenever he jumps, and you can clearly see the puppeteers working while it is attacking Lance Guest.
Yeah.
Also, anybody who is bitten by this shark not only erupts in the largest, most comical geyser of blood, but Mario Van Peebles does the worst, best Jamaican accent I have ever seen.
Yeah, it is an awful movie, an absolutely awful movie. At one point, Michael Caine jumps in the water. 5 seconds later, his shirt's dry. It's ridiculous. He said that the only reason he did that was so he'd buy a house and spend 3 months in Jamaica. That's the only reason he made the movie. It's a terrible movie. Matt, I gotta run. I gotta hit the news here. But thanks.
Much love, Nick.
Take care, buddy. Yeah, Jaws. You ever seen Jaws of Revenge?
Yes.
This time it's personal. I mean, it's unbelievable. It is a classic, terrible movie. And, of course, it tanked at the box office. But we've got more bombs here that that some of them actually bankrupt studios. And you know what's weird? I'm looking at this list of these movies that actually bankrupt studios, and I like a few of them. Like, a couple of them I really like. So, all right. We're talking about that after the news. So, 312-981-7200 for movie bombs. News is after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here on a Friday morning. Fly Jams Friday. Yeah! That's all coming up. Straight out of context, you big dummy. And we'll start with Nick D Show Spies. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're talking about movie bombs. Movies that were huge bombs, some of which bankrupt studios. Those are the extreme cases. And also some movie bombs that... That we don't remember were bombs because people like the movies now. We got some texts coming in. If you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 309 error code says Waterworld, Nick's favorite. I love Waterworld. I think Waterworld rules. And yes, it was a bomb. It was a huge bomb. And it dug itself into the makers of that movie dug themselves into a hole even before the movie came out. Because it went way over budget and way over schedule. And before the movie, even like months before the movie was even released, it was already being predicted to be one of the biggest bombs in Hollywood history. And then it did turn out to be a huge bomb. But it's a terrific movie. I don't care what anybody says. I love Waterworld. I think Waterworld is great. Ike and Country Club Players. Here's a shocker. He mentions Cobra. There's a real shocker for Mike. Underrated, misunderstood classic. Enough said. He said, "Okay, Ike, you can have your Cobra."
I'm pro Cobra.
Oh no! Come on, man!
Come on!
Come on!
I like a little Cobra,
and I like the car. I like this car. 440 area code says one that I saw in 1970 when I was stationed in Southeast Asia was THX 1138, and I think it was George Lucas's first movie. Yes, it was. And when you watch it a few times, it really makes sense. It's a good movie. Has a great car chase scene in it, like an underground roadway where Robert Duvall is being chased by robot motorcycle police. Yeah, that was his first film. That was was a cult movie. I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, it started out as his college thesis, if I'm not mistaken. That's how it started. And then it morphed into an actual movie that got released. And that was pre-American Graffiti. And American Graffiti was the first really big hit that George Lucas had. And then he had this little movie called Star Wars after that. So there you go. We're talking about movie flops. Here is Ed on WGN. Hi, Ed.
Hey, Ned.
Hey.
How you doing?
All right. What's up?
Hey, before I get to my thing, Waterworld, didn't you say that was like some other kind of movie on water?
It's like Mad Max on water.
Ah, that's it. That's it. Mad Max.
Yeah.
Okay, well, my bomb movie is Cleopatra.
Huge. Huge bomb. Huge
bomb. All that money. And you know something, Nick? I never find Elizabeth Taylor all that hot. Everybody thought she was a hot girl. I never saw it.
I mean, that's a matter of opinion, Ed. I happen to think she was a beautiful, beautiful woman. And obviously, there was a lot going on when they made that movie. There was a lot going on because, you know, Richard Burton and her got together and he was married. And it was the, you know, back then we didn't have the insane 24-hour tabloid news that we have now. And it was a big, big deal. And they were like the couple, you know, they were in the news all the time. And that really overshadowed what they were doing on the set of that movie. And she had a lot of power over it. She was one of the producers in the movie. And they just went, they kept going over budget. They kept going over schedule. You know, both of them, were making headlines outside of the making of Cleopatra, which was putting a damper on the making of the movie itself. And then when it came out, there was no possible way it could make them. And it didn't do terribly at the box office, but because they had spent so much money on it, there was no possible way that it was going to make, any kind of profit. So, I mean, but, you know, they, I mean, they sunk. That's another one of those movies where they just sunk it before it even came out. So, but yeah, and I personally, I think Elizabeth Taylor was an incredibly beautiful woman. So, but all right, Ed, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200. Now, somebody called in and mentioned The Secret of NIMH. Then Fox Animation Studios was born because of Don Bluth. And the success of An American Tale, and especially The Land Before Time, which is one of my favorite animated movies of all time. It is one of my favorite animated movies of all time. And then in June 2000, Titan A.E. hit theaters. A lush, traditionally animated movie that looks stunning as its characters were voiced by Matt Damon and Drew Barrymore, flew through space and braved alien worlds. Fox Animation spent $85 million on the film, which was targeted at a teen audience. Not a big animation market. It earned $9 million on its opening weekend. A week later, Fox announced that it was closing the studio. The writing had been on the wall already. In December of 99, executive forced Bluth to lay off 80% of his animators after the box office bonanza of the computer-generated Toy Story 2. So that closed the studio. Titan A.E. was a terrible movie. All right, how about this one? The Golden Compass. That was a weird movie. I didn't read any of the books, but wasn't there like a sort of a, like a monkey or something in
that?
I mean,
so the whole conceit of the books is that people have like a, they have like a familiar of sorts. They have like a, that takes,
by the way, speaking of which,
what we do in the shadows?
Yeah. Are you,
yeah.
It's by the way, I'm in love with the female lead. I love her. She's a British stand-up comedian.
So
I was never I was completely unfamiliar with her, but I love her.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, what we do. Yeah. If you're not watching What We Do in the Shadows on FX, you should, because it's hilarious. It's really funny.
Must watch.
Yes.
But basically, it's just like people have these familiars, and there's this whole thing where everybody boils it down to the plot point where they quote unquote kill God.
Oh, right.
And remember, there are a bunch of which is a complete. That's not what that's about.
Yeah.
But people took it that way in the books. They're amazing books. They're fantastic.
That's what I've heard. I've heard the books are great. I didn't read the book. I just saw the movie and I thought it was weird.
Oh, it's the movie is just a total. And the books are super weird.
Yeah.
They're very, very strange. But in a way that's awesome. The movie, not so much.
I just thought it was weird. Isn't it like a monkey or so? Is there like a monkey in
it? They take the place as they look like animals.
Okay,
that's
I remember.
You remember the monkey?
I just remember a monkey in it. That's the only thing. I remember thinking it was just the movie was really weird. And I watched the screener of it. I didn't see it on the big screen. I watched it in my living room with my ex-wife. We were sitting on the couch, both going, "The hell is this?"
Well, do you remember Christopher Lee as a talking polar bear?
I remember the talking polar bear. I didn't remember it was Christopher Lee. And is Nicole Kidman in it? Right?
Yeah, she's like one of the big baddies.
Okay. From its creation in the 70s, even after Warner Brothers bought a controlling stake, New Line Cinema was a mid-major movie studio that acted like an indie. Hey, listen, New Line Cinema, man, here's the deal. That's the studio that Freddie built, man. That's the studio that Freddie built. New Line Cinema needs to thank Freddy Krueger for their existence. So, you know, because they've all those incredibly successful Nightmare movies put New Line Cinema on the map. And, you know, and then they released quirky movies like Pink Flamingos, Boogie Nights. Hey, listen, they also released Magnolia, so learn. And then New Line peak came when the third part of its Lord of the Rings trilogy won 11 Academy Awards. Four years later, New Line wanted another fantasy series to cash cow like the Lord of the Rings or parent company Warner's Harry Potter movies. It put a version of the Golden Compass, Philip Pullman's first entry in his Dark Materials trilogy, into production. New Line pumped in $200 million on the project, more than it spent on anything, including Lord of the Rings. That cost more than Lord of the Rings?
Mm-hmm.
Good God.
Can you believe that?
To offset,
and that's the result?
That's insane. To offset production costs, the company pre-sold the overseas rights to Compass, meaning that when the film hit theaters outside of North America, it wouldn't recoup a dime. That's smart. That's smart business right there. They made a profit virtually impossible as the film's relatively small $70 million domestic take came through. This fiasco was the main reason Warner Brothers absorbed New Line into its existing film productions that started in February of 2008. Ousting Bob Shea and 90% of New Line's employees. So when you see New Line Cinema at the beginning of a film, it's just there.
It's like an imprint.
Yeah.
Doesn't really mean much.
Yeah. All right. Okay, here's one of the ones I liked. Cutthroat Island. I like Cutthroat Island.
You like Cutthroat Island?
Absolutely. I happen to have a real, real high tolerance for anything Rennie Harlan directs.
Oh, man.
I love Rennie. Look, I like Mindhunters. That's how much I like Rennie Harlan. I like The Adventures of Ford Fairlane.
Oh, my God.
That's how much I like Rennie Harlan. I think Die Hard 2 is as good as Die Hard. That's how much I like Rennie Harlan. Yeah, I'm not kidding.
You don't say those things on air.
Yes, I do.
You can't.
Yes,
you can't
I do.
Do that.
I'm telling you. There are times when I like Die Hard 2 more than Die Hard, depending on the mood.
You know, I really had a... I respected you. And now I think we've fundamentally changed.
Do you not like Kiss Me Goodnight? Or Long Kiss Goodnight?
I do like Long Kiss Goodnight.
Movie rules.
That's good. But I mean, and it's not, I'm not going to act like Die Hard 2. It's serviceable.
Oh, it's great.
It gets the job done, but you can't put that up against the original Die Hard.
Yeah.
The only Die Hard sequel that pushes for me, pushes up against the original is Die Hard with a Vengeance.
No, God. That's so much worse than Die Hard 2.
All right.
So much worse. Because it's got that stupid puzzle with pouring water that they figure out in 10 seconds. That took me an hour and a half to figure out. I remember the first time I saw...
The gallon of water.
Yeah, the first time I saw Die Hard 3, when the gallon of water, pour this on the scale, put this water, and they figure it out, and then they move on. I'm not kidding. The first time I saw Die Hard 3... I missed the next 10 minutes because I was going, how the hell did they put the water? What happened? What did they? And I still get confused when I watch Die Hard with a Vengeance. No, I think Die Hard 2 has got some unbelievable action sequences in it. I mean, that shootout on the moving sidewalk in the airport.
That's cool.
That's unbelievable.
Very cool.
The iconic shot of him in the ejector seat from the point of view of the sky with the plane exploding below him. The snowmobile chase and shootout, William Sadler naked doing jiu-jitsu, it's fantastic. Come on, man. John Amos, when John Amos turns out to be a bad guy, that's awesome. Dennis Franz, man, that movie rules, man. I love that movie. I love it. And I also, you know, one of the things I don't like about Die Hard with a Vengeance, and there are things in Die Hard with a Vengeance that are great, don't get me wrong. McTiernan came back and directed, and there's gonna I thought the chemistry between him and Samuel Jackson is cool, and there's some good action scenes in it. I don't hate it like as much as the ones that followed it, which were horrible. But the main thing about all the sequels after the second one, the key to me being invested in those movies is his relationship with Bonnie Bedelia, and it's Bonnie Bedelia's character. It's the emotional core of the first two movies. The fact that she's in jeopardy, and that's what makes McClane do what he does, and forced into these incredible situations because he wants to save his wife. That's not in the third one, nor is it in the other terrible. Well, they brought his son in. In I can't even remember what the hell sequel it was.
That was
Good Day to Die Hard.
No, they did in
Live Fast, Die Fast, or whatever the hell.
No, it was A Good Day to Die Hard.
Oh.
Played by Jai Courtney.
Just a terrible
Captain Boomerang.
Just a terrible, terrible. Those both were so terrible, and they were PG-13. Die Hard movies aren't PG-13.
Yeah, Yippee Ki-Yay, Mother Gunshot doesn't exactly have the same kick.
So, Anyway, but I like Cutthroat Island.
What was that? That's Gina Davis and Matthew Modine,
man. I love that movie.
It killed an entire genre of movies.
Not only did it kill... No, well, until Johnny Depp came out.
And then he brought it back and then killed it again.
But Corlico was done after that.
Oh, yeah. Not a chance.
I still go back and watch it. No, I'm a fan of Rennie Harlan, man. I really am. I think he's great. Did you see Prison?
No.
You got to see Prison, man. It's a fantastic horror movie, like one of his first movies out of the gate. Did you see the Nightmare 4?
Nightmare 4? Yeah, I've seen Nightmare 4.
Nightmare 4, Rennie Harlan, man.
I'm not saying that I would never watch this dude's movies ever. I think there's something to it, but you can't turn and tell me that Cutthroat Island is good.
I like Cutthroat Island. And again, as I've said before, Die Hard 2, as good, sometimes better, in my opinion.
I'll give him a cliffhanger.
Oh, cliffhanger rules, man. Don't even play around.
I'm not playing around. I do like cliffhanger
rules.
I do like cliffhanger.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. That's one of the only movies where you see Michael Rooker's name on the credits and you go, he's not the bad guy?
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. Every time you see Michael Rooker's name on the credits, like I remember when Sea of Love came out. You remember Sea of Love, Al Pacino? Ellen Barkin?
Yes.
Mystery?
Yeah.
It was Pacino's comeback movie. He hadn't made a movie in a long time, mm-hmm. and it was really good. Comeback. Directed by Harold Becker and John Goodman, fantastic, mm-hmm. and it's a really terrific movie. Really steamy scenes with Ellen Barkin, too. Like it's one of those good sort of like sexy thriller things. Great comeback for Pacino. But I remember it's a mystery, too. You don't know who the killer is because they want to make it seem like it's sort of like a Basic Instinct thing because it might be. Well, that was actually before Basic Instinct. But anyway, I remember the first time I saw it and the credits popped up and I saw Michael Rooker's name on the credits and I went, he's the killer. And it's another heater.
Of course.
The killer.
Of course.
Just don't put his name in the credits.
Pretty much right. Not there.
Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. And it's Friday, so that means all the Fly Jam Friday is coming up and all the regular Friday features straight out of context. Nick D Show Spies and You Big Dummy. We are talking about big time movie bombs. And the next one here that basically these bombs were so big that they actually shut down companies and shut down studios. Next one is Final Fantasy, The Spirits Within, which was a terrible movie. All right, let me ask you this. Are there any movies based on video games that you like? Because most of them are absolute crap.
I'm not going to lie to you.
Mortal Kombat, right?
No.
Oh, okay.
I had an affinity for that when I was... I mean, I still love Mortal Kombat. The new one just came out this week, so I've been playing like crazy. But anyway, I had an affinity for that when I was a kid. But honestly, 100%, I think Resident Evil Extinction, not terrible.
Okay. I don't like any of those.
They're all pretty bad, but... Resident Evil Extinction is pretty much as good as it gets because it's just ripping off Day of the Dead, and they do a decent job of being that.
Here's the only one that I've ever liked. The only movie that's based on a video game that I like is Silent Hill. And I just thought it was really cool. I had no idea what the hell was going on. I don't play. Mm-hmm. I'm not a gamer, so I don't play any video games. So when I went to go see it, I didn't know what was going on. I thought it was genuinely creepy.
Yeah, but wasn't there one? Was that the one with
the female lead? And I can't remember.
I know that. I feel like there was one with Michelle Williams in it. It might have been a sequel.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm talking about the original.
The original one. Yeah.
As far as I can tell, Silent Hill. That's the only video game based movie that I remember liking. And again, I didn't know what was going on. I was just sitting in the theater going, I have no idea what the hell's happening, but it's cool. hold on a second. Yeah, because there's two of them, right?
Yes.
Okay, Rhoda Mitchell is the lead in Silent Hill. Yeah. And I thought it was really, I thought it was pretty cool, man. Sean Bean's in it too. I'm looking back now. And Alice Creed, yeah, she played the weird evil queen thing. But that was the only one. That was the only video game based movie that I didn't hate. Was Silent Hill, but the people who were with me thought I was nuts. because I was with my my ex and one of my friends. We saw that Bruin View, and it was the first feature, so I wasn't drunk yet. So I was still sober, you know. Now, granted, if it was the second feature and I was like, this is a great movie, you could question, you know, my judgment. But I really liked it. But the people who were with me were like, you're out of your mind. It's terrible. But I like a lot of movies that people think are terrible, obviously, and I've already proven that to you this morning by talking about how much I enjoy Cutthroat Island.
Good Lord.
Waterworld? I love Waterworld.
I'm here for Waterworld.
Yeah. You got to be on board for Waterworld, man. It's an American classic. All right. Let's take a break. The news is coming up after this and more movie bombs. If you guys want to jump in, some of these turned out to be movies that we all love now. And that's all coming up here on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. That song's a jam. Old Frankenstein. Hey, welcome back. It's Nick DiGilio here, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're here till 5 a.m., and yeah, it's Friday morning. That means Fly Jams Friday. Straight out of context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, all coming up. We have been talking about movies that bombed so bad that some of them even closed down some studios. And we've got some people who have texted in with their movie bombs. And if you want to do that, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text, 312-981-7200. 301 area code says some movies that tanked at the box office that I like, The Rocketeer. I like that movie.
And Joe Johnson directed that.
Yeah.
Who would go on to do Captain America, The First Avenger.
And, yeah, I mean, he directed a lot of stuff.
Jurassic Park 3.
Yeah. Yeah. What, you know what Eric calls him? Eric Childress calls him?
What?
Good old three-star Joe Johnson. He doesn't direct great movies. He doesn't direct bad movies. He's good old three-star Joe Johnson.
I like him. I think he's all right.
The Phantom with Billy Zane. You should listen to your friend Billy Zane, which is the only...
Can it, Zane?
Yeah, it's my favorite line in Zoolander, which is a movie that I don't like, but I think you should listen to your friend Billy Zane. And that and Bowie's cameo.
Yep.
The Shadow with Alec Baldwin, that was a terrible movie. I mean, I barely remembered. I just remember it was bad. But I enjoyed Rocketeer. I enjoyed The Rocketeer.
Rocketeer's really fun.
Yeah, and Jennifer Connelly's in it, for God's sake. Mm-hmm. 708 area code, Howard the Duck is a guilty pleasure treat that bombed. I know that there's a fan base for Howard the Duck. I know a lot of people who like Howard the Duck. I think it's a piece of crap, but I liked the version of Howard the Duck that shows up in the Guardian movies.
Yeah, voiced by Seth Green, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, I thought that was pretty funny. It was so funny, the first Guardians movie, because everybody waits. You have to wait for the postscript. You know, like I'm going to sit through a 3-hour movie tomorrow and then sit there more during the credits. Because there's going to be a scene at the end that you got to sit through. So, but I love the fact that you sat through all those credits and it was a Howard the Duck scene at the end of Guardians, which I thought was a perfect way to end Guardians. Was that? Glenn in Evanston says it seems like Geely was so bad it only made $65 at the box office. It made a little more than $65, but it did tank, and it was a terrible movie. 815 area code says, Solo, A Star Wars Story, may not have put up the box office numbers, but it's a great movie, and I believe it will be a cult classic, the cult classic of Star Wars. I liked Solo. I thought it was fun. I thought it was fun. I thought it was entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
And the reception that it received, I was both surprised and irritated by the reception it received. I thought it was a very entertaining movie.
The only real problem is that it's just very middle of the road. In certain ways. Like Ron Howard's not a bad director.
Yeah, he's not.
He's just very vanilla.
I can't think of a Ron Howard movie that I loved. I really can't. I mean, I like Solo, but I can't think of a Ron Howard movie that I loved. I can't. Huh. I like Night Shift because of Michael Keaton.
Again, but it's just like, it's just all right.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But as far as Star Wars movies go, for me, man, Rogue One, that's the deal.
See, and for me, the last act, the last act of that movie is the only thing that keeps me going, keeps me maybe want to watch it again.
I love it. It's because I'm not. Have we talked about how I'm not a Star Wars guy at all?
Yeah.
Okay. I really truly think that that might be my favorite Star Wars movie of all of them.
A lot of people really love it.
And, you know, I would be, for me, it's either Empire or Rogue One, as far as, like, any of the Star Wars stuff. And granted, I'm not a star, like, I hated Jedi, and the prequels are unspeakable. I like Force Awakens, a lot, actually, and I like Last Jedi a lot. And I like the new stuff. I think I like the new stuff more than the classic stuff. The more that I think about it, but I love Rogue One, man. I thought Rogue One was great, and from beginning to end. One of the reasons why I've talked about this before, one of the reasons why I think I like it so much, because everybody dies at the end. Like, everybody gets killed, and you know that's going to happen.
You know it from the beginning.
If you know Star Wars at all, yeah. you know what this mission, what happened. So I think people who are Star Wars know the stories of Star Wars were not surprised by that. I don't think I'm ruining anything, but they all die. So. All right. Now here's a notorious one. This is a notorious one, and I also happen to love it, and that's Heaven's Gate, which I think is a great movie. And I'm talking the full on over 4 hour version that Cimino's director's cut.
And it's a great story of what happens when an auteur bounces up against the studio.
Well, you know, he did go a little nutty.
He's Michael Cimino.
Yeah, but I mean, this was right after Deer Hunter, and they gave him the keys, you know what I mean? Let him go. You can't let Michael Cimino go, and they did. United Artists closed. The United Artists was done. It was the end of United Artists. Now it's MGM UA, or it was MGM UA. MGM
picked it up.
Picked him up.
And, the house that Chaplin built.
And it was... They spent $40 million. Now that's 1979 money. Okay,
ugh.
They spent $40 million on it, even more than that, and it made $3 million. But it's a great movie. I don't care what anybody says. I love that movie. I remember I was lucky enough to moderate a Q&A with Vilmos Zsigmond. And I got to meet Vilmos Zsigmond, who is one of the greatest cinematographers that has ever lived, and he shot Heaven's Gate. He also shot one of my favorite movies of all time, Blowout, and I got to meet him, and he was a wonderful man. They had made a documentary about him and Laszlo Kovacs. Have you ever seen it?
Which one is it?
God, I can't remember the name of it. It's a documentary about Laszlo Kovacs and Vilmos Zsigmond, two immigrants who are two of the greatest cinematographers that ever worked in American cinema. Mm-hmm. And it's a great documentary, and both of those guys were two of the greatest cinematographers that ever lived, and God bless them both. But Vilmos came around, came to town with the director to a screening. We screened it at the Film Center, at Gene Siskel Film Center, and then I was lucky enough to do the Q&A afterwards. And some guy in the audience, when we were taking questions from the audience, some guy in the audience goes, how does it feel to be a part of one of the worst movies ever made? This is literally a question this guy asked. He goes, how does it feel to be a part of one of the worst movies ever made? Heaven's Gate? And so I immediately stop him. I go, whoa, first of all, where are your manners? This is Vilmos Zsigmond. Don't form a question like that. This guy's one of the greatest cinematographers that ever lived. You should be lucky to be in the same room with him, let alone insult him like that. And then second of all, I said, Heaven's Gate happens to be a great movie. And I go, and then suddenly the audience was like, they started cheering me because it was a bunch of cinephiles. You know what I mean? You're at Siskel Center, you know, a Vilmos Zsigmond Q&A. Of course Heaven's Gate fans are going to be there. So this guy, how do you feel to be part of the worst movie ever made? And then afterwards he comes up to me. He's like, hey, man, I'm a big fan of yours. I didn't appreciate that. And I said, well, he didn't appreciate the way you talked about the movie.
Yeah.
And he was gracious as hell. He talked about his experience working on Heaven's Gate.
Mm-hmm.
And said it was really challenging, and he was super disappointed that the movie turned out to be the financial disaster that it did. He was not happy about the cut that UA forced Cimino to make. And then that's another one of these movies that triumphantly returned, you know, in its full-on state, and people finally went, oh.
Yeah. Even something that was considered good in its time, like Once Upon a Time in America.
That cut that they sent out, the studio cut. the 2-hour and 10-minute.
It's almost
it's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. And now you can just easily get that full 4-hour masterpiece.
And it's a masterpiece. It's a masterpiece. I talked with I did William Forsythe's Q&A at one of the flashback conventions because he's in all the Rob Zombie movies. And the first thing I asked him was, I said, what was it like working with Leone? And he said it was a dream come true. And then I was like, well, can you kind of express how the studio handled that and what it did to Leone? He said it almost killed him. You know, it was the most heartbreaking thing that he's ever gone through was the way that Once Upon a Time in America was handled. Because it's one of his masterpieces. How about The Rocker? Did you ever see The Rocker?
I did, and I really thought it was okay.
I did, too. I thought it was funny.
Fairly funny. Emma Stone is in it.
Yes, Emma Stone, early Emma Stone. And this, for people who might not know, this was a vehicle for Rainn Wilson.
Which, I love the guy. I think he's great. I think he's a very talented dude. He's not the regional manager. He's the assistant to the regional manager, man. He's a great bit player. He is not a leading man.
No. But I actually thought the movie was pretty funny, but man, did it tank. So Fox Atomic wanted to bring out cool comedies. That was supposed to be what they do, but that shut it down.
Yeah, a little bit of horror as well. They did. They were the label under which 28 Weeks Later was released.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I don't even remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, because 28 Days Later was such a revelation for people that when they did the sequel, they had this special Fox Atomic thing going on.
Right.
It was great.
Yeah. I like 28 Weeks Later. Renner's in that, right?
Yeah. Pre-fame Jeremy Renner. You've got Robert Carlyle.
Oh, right. Well, Robert Carlyle was in the first one, wasn't he? No.
He's not, no.
No, he's not. Even though it's directed by Danny Boyle, he's not in it. Yeah. So that's weird.
I know. But Robert Carlyle, one of the great British actors.
Oh, yeah. Come on.
So
man.
Good.
See, he's amazing in Trainspotting, as is everybody. And that I love the fact that the craziest lunatic in the movie is not on H. He's just a drunk.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Begbie.
Like Begbie, he's not on heroin. He doesn't do smack. He just drinks, and he's the biggest lunatic out of everybody.
What's the line they use? Oh, Begbie doesn't do drugs. He does people.
Exactly.
He does them in.
God, I love that movie. Did you like the sequel?
I think it's brilliant.
I think it.
It's the best of all possible worlds for that sequel.
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And nobody saw it. Nobody saw it. But, I remember how radical Trainspotting was when it first came out. Just like, I remember seeing it for the first time going, man, this is new. This is something completely different. And the use of music and the casting was so, nobody knew who Ewan McGregor, nobody knew who anybody, any of those guys were. But great use of Iggy Pop. I mean, that's what I think of now. You can't listen to Lust for Life and not think of Trainspotting.
Well, yeah, every day when I hear Roe,
yeah,
opens up with Lust for Life, and all I can see is
Ewan McGregor running down the street.
And Ewan McGregor and Ewan Bremner running down the street.
Yeah.
So good.
I was so excited about the sequel, man. And I went I was so very excited because I love Trainspotting. I really do. The only movie that Danny Boyle made that I don't like at all is Shallow Grave.
You don't like Shallow Grave?
I hate Shallow Grave.
Oh, my God.
I like Sunshine more than Shallow Grave, and I hate the ending of Sunshine. You know what? I'm not crazy about the one that he won all the Oscars.
Slumdog Millionaire?
I'm not crazy about that movie either.
Yeah.
But the only one I absolutely dislike is Shallow Grave. I can't stand Shallow Grave.
I wasn't a huge fan of Trance. You remember Trance?
Listen, here's the thing. I think
Hey, listen.
Here's the thing about Trance. Two words. Rosario Dawson.
Okay.
That's it. It's worth
saying.
End of the conversation at that point. No, actually, I like Trance. I think Trance is crazy.
It was very cool.
It's cool. It's crazy. And Rosario Dawson.
1, 2, 3.
That's all I'm saying. All right, let's take a break here for the weather, and then we'll close out the whole talk about movie bombs. The next one, by the way, that we're talking about, again, is a movie that I love. This is a music from a really big bomb.
Yeah, who remembers Back to the Future? I have
no one.
Weird '80s movie.
No idea what that is. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. A Friday morning. All the Friday features coming up in just a little bit. Also coming up in Stories That Matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We're talking about movie bombs, and particularly movie bombs that that actually bankrupt some studios. Now, the other topic that we were going to piggyback on that, we're going to hang on to, and I'll do it at a different time, and that's movies that bombed that you can't believe were bombs, considering how much people love them now. So that's a whole nother area that we can get into. But this is the last of the movie bombs that actually bankrupt the studio, and it's another one that I like. Francis Ford Coppola's One from the Heart.
Oh, wow.
Which I think is, have you seen it?
I have.
I love it. I love it.
A lot of people really hate it. I don't really hate it. I just, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, wow, this is from the guy who made The Godfather.
Yeah.
And Apocalypse Now. And then even for the for this kind of teen phase with The Outsiders and Rumblefish, with which I think are two amazing takes on a genre.
Yeah. Well, don't forget The Conversation.
And The Conversation.
Which is,
yeah,
which is actually my favorite a Coppola movie of all time, is The Conversation.
I think that's a runner.
But I think one from the Heart, you know, I really love it, but I think it's also, I mean, I can understand it. I mean, it was like, it was a noble attempt at something. And it was sort of, it was like in the same sort of way that, that Hitchcock did with Rope. It was an experiment. And he always wanted to make a musical. And again, like what he did with Dracula, there was a lot of on-set trickery and camera trickery that he did. But man, did it receive a horror! I mean, it was received absolutely horribly. I mean, I remember when it came out. Francis Ford Coppola is undeniably a filmmaking genius, a leading voice of the '70s auteur movement, in which directors are considered to be the author of a film and the entire production cedes to their vision. He directed some of the best movies ever made, including The Godfather and Apocalypse Now. By 1982. Coppola could basically do whatever he wanted in Hollywood, and that meant filming a passion project called One from the Heart, made under his own shingle American zoetrope. Coppola's best-known works have almost universal appeal. At their core, as The Godfather is a story about family. Apocalypse Now is about the horrors of war. One from the Heart, however, is a strange blue-collar romantic comedy set a purposely artificial-looking Las Vegas with painted backgrounds and built-from-scratch replica of Vegas's McCarran Airport. Coppola experimented with his filming technique, too, using both video and film stocks during the production. The total cost was a bewildering $27 million. The box office haul was $637,000.
Oh, my God.
The film faded from theaters and memory, but not from ledgers. In 1992, Coppola filed bankruptcy to protect himself and his wife and his companies. He was in the hole for tens of millions in large due to the personal and professional financial losses that were suffered from during One from the Heart.
Well, at least it's not Jack.
Oh, my God, was that a terrible movie.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's the low point, I think, for Coppola, is Jack. That's absolutely the low point. One from the Heart, at least he was trying to do something, and he was sincere about it, you know? That was the same year, by the way, you know, like you got Coppola and you got Scorsese. The same year, they released two movies that completely tanked following, you know, very successful stuff. So, you know, this one basically followed Apocalypse Now, and I think is a good movie. And the Scorsese follow up to Raging Bull, which I think is a great movie, is King of Comedy, and that bombed when it came out.
But it's excellent.
It's a great movie.
It's incredible that people did not receive it.
It's a pretty abrasive movie, man.
It is, I guess.
No, it is. It's a pretty.
Well, what's Raging Bull?
This movie was I think I've seen King of Comedy 9,000 times, and I don't know. Have we talked about? Have we ever talked about my love and admiration for Jerry Lewis?
And how? No, but I can imagine.
He's a genius. One of the greatest American filmmakers that's ever lived. He, by the way, I'm sure you know this already. He, by the way, invented the video assist. Invented it. Yeah. Every set of every TV and every movie has a video assist where the director can look back at what they just shot.
Mm-hmm. And Jerry Lewis
invented it.
God.
Invented it. And he's directed, like, The Nutty Professor is a masterpiece. It's one of the greatest movies ever made. And I think he was, I mean, unjustly made fun of. He doesn't have the he does now a little bit more than he used to. But it was like, oh, the French like him and he sucks. That was like the thing. I love Jerry Lewis. He's one of my heroes. He truly, truly is one of my heroes. So much so that when Jerry Lewis passed away, I got like a million texts and phone calls from people who were like, are you okay?
I remember I was here. I think I was producing, I want to say it was Dean's show. And in the middle of it, you know, I was just on Twitter and all of a sudden there it was.
I mean, he, you know.
What was the name of the movie that he never finished?
The Day the Clown Cried.
The Day the Clown. Well,
yeah.
One of the great unanswered questions.
I only got to meet Jerry Lewis one time, and it was at a press conference. He was touring with Damn Yankees. He did the stage version of Damn Yankees, and Roy brought me in because he knows, you know, he knew how much I worshipped Jerry Lewis, and I want to see The Day the Clown Cried. I whatever footage is available, I've seen whatever anything. I mean, I worship Jerry Lewis, so I get this one chance to ask Jerry Lewis a question, my hero, one of my idols, and I ask him. And he comes in, he's got his golf shorts on, you know, and the sneakers and all that stuff, and the zip-up sweater, Jerry Lewis. He comes in, first thing he sees is Roy, and Roy knows everybody in entertainment. He comes in, he goes, Jesus, Roy, you still working? And that was the first thing he said. So I raise my hand to ask a question. He calls on me, looks at me, and I'm looking at Jerry Lewis, and I say, are we ever going to see The Day the Clown Cried? And he looked at me, and if laser beams could shoot out of his eyes and blow my head off, they would have. And he just goes, no, next question. Because it was a rough film for him. He lost a bunch of money.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I had one chance to ask him a question. I was like, because I want to see that. And it was a sincere question. I didn't want to bring up like one of his worst, worst periods of his life. And he was also, he's also completely addicted to Percodan the whole time he made that movie and barely remembers the entire decade of the 70s. But I really, truly want to see it as a fan. And then Roy laughed. Like, he goes, no, next question. I look at Roy. Roy's just shaking his head like, you idiot.
Here's the dummy. You big dummy. You big dummy. See what you did? Oh, no, you big dummy. You dummy.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. Yeah. And Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran at 6. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. Our regular Friday features begin right now with
You Big Dummy.
So you know what this is. This is when we read real dumb, real news stories about real dumb people doing real dumb stuff. And then we vote on who's the biggest dummy. So let's get started. Dummy number one. A road crew in Florida should get an F for spelling. A motorist on Thursday spotted the error, realizing that workers in Doral, Florida, had made a mistake when painting the word school on a pedestrian crossing in the road. Instead of S-C-H-O-O-L, it was spelled S-C-O-H-O-L. WPLG brought it to the city's attention, and the city tweeted that the private contractor has now corrected its work. It's not clear how long the mistake was there in plain sight.
I'll spell it for you. D-U-M-M-Y, period. Dummy.
Dummy number two. Dummy number two. Dummy number two. A Singapore-bound scoot flight from Bengaluru was delayed by more than 16 hours after a passenger raised a false security alarm. The flight was scheduled to depart at 1:20. It finally left 1:20 a.m. It finally left at 5:23 p.m. with over 173 passengers stranded. According to sources, the passenger had issued a verbal threat to the cabin crew about a quote-unquote gun in one of his bags. Passenger was then rushed to the station where he was questioned. Airport police officer said the man was let off as he was found to be joking, and that indeed it was not a gun but a guitar in his bag. While confirming the incident, they said that a verbal security threat was issued by the passenger. Due to that, he had to be deboarded by CAISF personnel. The remaining passengers were also deboarded. Their luggage was offloaded, after which they had to be rescreened for security and immigration clearance. Oh, my God, said American authorities. A hoax security threat was made at 1:48 a.m. on April 23rd relating to the Scoot Airlines flight. Standard security protocols and procedures were followed, with no suspicious items were found. A passenger was deboarded from the flight by the CISF security and immigration clearance. Everybody else was deboarded and rescreened. A replacement aircraft and crew was flown in. Meanwhile, food and refreshments were organized. Oh, good. At least they had some food and refreshments. During this time, there was no impact on operations at the airport. A replacement flight from Singapore, operated by a new crew, was arranged by the airport by the airlines to ferry the affected passengers from Bengaluru to Singapore. The Scoot mounted a replacement flight from Singapore to transport affected customers. And they regretted the incident happened.
La-dee-dee, they la-dee-dum is dummy. There's Donna and me, and the dummy makes three.
Dummy number three. Dummy number three. It's often said that necessity is the mother of invention, and for a recent plane passenger, another plane story here, plane passenger, an $85 baggage fee motivated her to don nearly 9 pounds of clothing. Natalie Wynn, a 30-year-old woman headed to an all-inclusive vacation from Manchester, England, opted for a creative, if uncomfortable, alternative to paying an extra fee after she found out that her luggage was 8.81 pounds over the permitted weight limit for her Thomas Cook Airlines flight. I didn't want to be using the little amount of money I had just so I could get my bag on the plane, she told the Sun. I literally said, I'm not paying it, and started putting my clothes on. I was boiling, absolutely boiling. Wynn's 9 pounds of clothing amounted to 7 dresses, 2 pairs of shoes, 2 pairs of shorts, a skirt, and a cardigan, which she was allowed to repack in her bag once she had boarded the flight. She later explained that she turned to wearing the excess weight in her suitcase because the extra baggage fee was more money than she had brought for vacation. Because I had booked an all-inclusive holiday, so I was getting all of my food and drink. I didn't plan on bringing much money with me. I think I only had about 69 pounds or 69 euro in my account just to bring with me on holiday. Wynn's resourceful approach to travel even impressed the airline she flew with. A spokesperson for Thomas Cook told People magazine, Natalie's ingenuity here is noted. The good news for Natalie and the rest of our customers is that later this month we are increasing our hand baggage allowance. This will hopefully help her travel a little less like Joey from Friends next time. I don't get that reference. Do you get that reference? Did Joey?
I hate Friends. So.
I never. So did Joey put on extra clothing?
I guess so.
Did he pile on clothing? I don't know. Okay, that's a reference that's lost on me. If it was a Seinfeld reference, I would have got it. All right.
Have you ever seen him act?
I've been watching him act all his life. Like a dummy. I mean, I didn't know you were interested in gardening.
Why not?
Well, up to now, the only thing you've grown is dumber and dumber.
All right. Let's take a break here for the weather. When we come back, we got a couple of more dummies to tell you about, dumb stories to tell you about, and then we vote on who is the biggest dummy. And then we'll jump into Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, and then the funky stuff begins right here on WGN. Yeah, we're back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we are here until 5 a.m. And now let's get back to you, big dummy. Dummy number four, dummy number four, dummy number four. A Minnesota motorist was cited this month after police spotted her watching an episode of Parks and Recreation on her phone while she was supposed to be paying attention to other more pressing concerns. On April 15th, a police officer in Blaine, a city about 20 miles north of Minneapolis, spotted the distracted driver appearing to be enjoying some kind of filmed entertainment. When the cop exited his squad car and approached the 32-year-old suspect, she confessed that she was watching an episode of Parks and Recreation while behind the wheel. The NBC sitcom starred Amy Poehler as Leslie Knope, a municipal bureaucrat from the fictional town of Pawnee, Indiana. The motorist was cited in connection with a statute barring the installation or use of television screens in any motor vehicle where images from the screen are visible to the driver while operating the motor vehicle. On Tuesday afternoon, a male motorist received a pair of citations after a Minnesota State Patrol officer spotted him driving on the interstate while watching an episode of Law and Order on his phone. He was also not wearing his seatbelt at the time while he was watching the NBC police procedural. A police citation does not indicate what Parks and Recreation episode was being viewed by the female driver, but The Fight from Season 3 and Pawnee Zoo from Season 2 would have been solid choices. In the latter episode, Knope presided over the marriage of the Pawnee Zoo's two male penguins, prompting demands from city residents to annul the same-sex union of Tux and Flipper. Knope eventually drove the penguins to the zoo in Iowa, where gay marriage is legal. In an effort to combat distracted driving, Minnesota's government this month signed a bill typing violating the hands-free law, which takes effect on August 1st, will result in a $50 ticket and court costs for first-time offenders.
The only reason I call you a dummy is because I call them as I see them. My only child is a dummy.
Now, to be fair, Parks and Rec's a really good show. Just give her a little...
Give Parks, her some credit.
Parks and Rec's a good show. Dummy number five, dummy number five, dummy number five. Matthew Aris was arrested after impersonating a police officer while attempting to pull over an undercover detective in Hillsborough County, Florida. Authorities say a Florida man impersonating an officer flipped the red and blue lights on his SUV while unknowingly trying to stop the car of a real officer. WFLA reports 26-year-old Matthew Aris was arrested on charge of impersonating a public officer. An arrest report says Aris turned on the red and blue lights on his SUV in Plant City, Florida to try and stop the car in front of him. The driver was an undercover Hillsborough County's sheriff's detective in an unmarked car. He didn't pull over and said he called dispatchers to alert deputies who later stopped Aris.
Yeah, I'm worthless, penniless, broke, busted, and
a dummy. And I can't wait to see you starring in your first movie.
Yeah.
Deep Dummy.
All right. We have to vote here. Let me give you the recap, and then we will vote here on WGN. And let's see. We got the dummy road crew that misspelled the word school in a school crossing zone. We got the dummy passenger on a plane who joked about having a gun, causing an incredible delay. I don't know if this person's a dummy, though. We got the dummy who wore 9 pounds of clothes to avoid a baggage fee. I'm not sure she's a dummy.
I think she is.
And we got the dummy who was watching Parks and Rec while driving, and the dummy pretending to be a cop who pulled over a real cop. So we have to vote. All right, Tom, what's your thought processes?
I have to reiterate, I think that woman who put, 9 pounds of clothing on is a huge dummy.
Okay.
I mean, I get it. She didn't have the money, but, why?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's funny.
I'm going to say the guy pretending to be a cop accidentally pulling over an actual cop.
Right.
I think, I don't know how dumb you can get.
Okay. All right. You guys, the phone lines are open. The first listener through will be the third vote. Call right now at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And the first listener through will be our third vote. So you're going for the dummy who pretended to be a cop and he pulled over a real cop.
Yes.
Okay. There's some strong ones here. The guy who joked about the gun is not only a dummy, but a jerk.
Yeah.
And should have been thrown in prison for doing that. Especially, I mean, you know, first of all, it's very stupid and very scary to even joke about that kind of thing on a plane, you know, with the security problems and the security issues that have been happening for years here. But also, what followed had to have been a nightmare for 173 other people. Like, your little joke, you know, affected the travels of 173 people. It's a nightmare. Again, I don't think the woman who put the 9 pounds of clothes on is a dummy. I don't.
All right.
I know. She may have looked dumb, you know, with two dresses on, four skirts, and 15 pairs of shoes, but I don't think she's a dummy. The dummy who was watching Parks and Rec is a dummy. There's absolutely no question about it. And then the dummy pretending to be a cop who pulled over a real cop, and that's Florida, too, which is another wonderful addition to the story. Any time these stories take place in Florida, that's, you know, that's pretty special. And I got, you know what, I'm going to have to agree with you. I think the biggest dummy on this list is the guy pretending to be a cop who actually pulled over a real cop. So now we just want to get a third vote. Who would Jason, who would have you voted for the dummy of the week?
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, who would you vote for?
I would go for the guy with the gun on the plane just because he caused so much hassle.
Okay.
I mean, although the dummy with the cop thing, that's pretty dumb too. But I would just
All right. So you're voting for the guy who claimed to have a gun on the plane. All right. Well,
that is pretty dumb.
Yeah,
I think that's a good choice.
Yeah. God, what a jerk.
Yeah.
And the dummy watching Parks and Rec. It's not just dumb, dangerous. Even though I got to say, Parks and Rec is a good show.
Would you put your life on the line for Parks and Rec?
I would not put my life on the line for Parks and Rec. I love Parks and Rec. I love Amy Poehler. I love Nick Offerman. Rob Lowe has never been better. By the way, have you been watching Mental Samurai?
No, that's a game show, right?
Right.
Is he the host?
Yes, he is.
You know what? I miss The Grinder.
So do I.
I thought that was a great TV show.
You know, I was very happy to hear Dan Feinberg actually mention it yesterday morning, because I watched that show regularly. I thought that show was really funny. I really did. So all right, well, there you go. And you know, we won't have a shortage. We never have a shortage of dummies, so we will not have a shortage of dummies. And next week we will jump right back into the world of dummies and do You Big Dummy. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And let's see. I think we have. I think we can get maybe one or two. I think we can get maybe one or two straight out of contexts in. A couple of straight out of contexts in before we break here for the news. Let's get a few in, okay? Let's try this. So when I'm in your neighborhood, you better duck, because Ice Cube is crazy as F-bomb. As I leave, believe I'm stomping, but when I come back, boy, I'm coming straight
out of context, context, context. Context.
What's up? Tell them where you're from.
Straight out of context, 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 context.
All right, we can squeeze a few in before we hit the news, just to start us off. Straight out of context, that's when you listen to this radio station 24/7, as you should, because it's the best radio station in the world. And whenever anybody at any time says something on the air that sounds a little bit dirty and it makes you giggle, jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. All right, let's get a couple in before the break here.
All right. We got a ton of them this week, so real quick. First one's from Deanna. Hi, Deanna. She caught you saying this.
Open up all the flaps. Slide the whole thing in. Oh, man. I was just trying to help people unload pop cans into their fridge.
Yeah, very just helping people unload.
Helping people unload. That's, jeez. Oh, man. All right.
All right, next up, Kevin in Lakewood caught Wendy.
I enjoyed that because it was smaller and it was more doable.
Oh, my God. Okay, One more before we break for the news.
All right, one more. Scott in Carpentersville, another Wendy Snyder classic.
Of course.
If I'm kissing, right. I don't want any blood sucking going
These
on.
Are...
that midday show is filthy. All right, we're going to take a break, and we got the news coming up, and then after the news, more Straight out of Context. We got Nick D Show Spies, and then it's going to get funky up in here. And Luscious Hushus is going to make his appearance as well. But first, we break for the news.
So when I'm in your neighborhood, you better duck, because Ice Cube is crazy as
F-bomb.
As I leave, believe I'm stomping, but when I come back, boy, I'm coming straight
out of context, context, context.
What's up?
Tell them where you're from.
Straight out of context, 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 context.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we're here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich follows at 5 with the opening bell, and Steve Cochran at 6. All right, let's get back to it. Our regular Friday features are happening right now, and we were in the middle of Straight Out of Context. So let's dive right back in. Tom, what do we got next?
All right, next, Linda from Blue Island caught Steve Cochran.
Then they drove the sperm to Wisconsin.
Tagline to my book, actually.
I think, yeah. That's a sentence you don't hear every day. Okay, next.
All right, next is Mary Vandeveld, and she was caught by Brian.
Yeah, it was long.
Short, sweet, and to the point.
Exactly. All right.
Anna DeVlantes got caught. She doesn't appear here all that much, but Fox Valley Mike heard this.
Well, he doesn't want it to be, you know, coming in and out of it, coming in and out of there.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Oh, boy. Okay.
The queen of Straight Out of Context, Wendy Snyder.
Just little squirts here and there, maybe 6 to 8 squirts.
Oh, come on.
And that was Scott and Carpenter.
Good Lord, man. All right.
All right. John Williams makes an appearance. Kelly from Elgin caught him saying this.
I promise you, you will enjoy it. And if you don't have a memorable happy time, full refund.
That's a guarantee.
Yeah.
That's the John Williams guarantee.
That's the J-Dub guarantee right there. I've heard that before. Okay.
All right, Brian with another one here.
I ate like the butt.
Mary Sandberg.
That was Mary Sandberg.
Yeah.
Okay. It always involves eating with Mary.
Well, you know. She's got that whole thing with the sausage McMuffin or whatever it is.
Yeah. All right.
All right, next up here is Bill Leff.
All I'd have to do is I would go like, ah, like that, and that would do it. It would stiffen up.
Oh, boy.
Who sent that? Jesse.
Okay. Oh, my God. All right.
Jesse's got a... I got to say, Jesse, this is a Hall of Famer right here.
Sweat's just pouring off her body as she's, like, outstroking some guy from Nebraska.
Wow. And that's J-Dub.
Yeah, that's J-W. My goodness.
Oh, man. All right.
Can't believe they put that on there.
Well, you know.
You know.
John Williams is a lunatic. We all know that.
All right. Another one from Bill Leff.
So you will play with a contestant, and I will play with a contestant.
That's Ken from Hillside.
Okay. Let's continue.
All right. Steve Cochran, caught by Fox Valley Mike.
No, I mashed.
Really?
Yeah, I mashed. I mashed it.
Jeez. Okay.
Doing a little mashing. All right. This one's from Maria.
The question is it going to happen in front of the bathroom or in an office?
Was that Roe?
No, Steve Grzanich, I believe.
Oh, that was Grzanich. Okay. Yeah. All right.
All right. Again, Wendy Snyder. This one caught by Barbara.
Guy put it behind my ears,
yes.
My wrists, in between the girls,
yeah.
And sometimes just spray it on me.
Uh-huh. Okay.
All right. Here's one from John.
Because it's a thicker part, so it's hard for me to eat.
Again, Mary Sandberg.
What's going on, Sandberg?
It's always food related. Always. Okay.
All right. Two more. Last two here from John Williams, and these were both caught by Chris in Riverside.
He looked at me like I didn't know what a ball was.
Uh-huh.
And then finally.
Let's go. Come on. Come on. Work it, LF.
What's going on? What's going on with Williams this week?
I don't know.
He dominated.
He did.
He dominated.
He had a great week this week.
Wow. You know, I mean, he's, you know, he appears here and there. You know, he's been on several times, but wow, that's a strong, strong, crazy showing for John Williams this week. Keep your ears peeled on in middays. Things exactly. are nuts. Is Elif okay? That's the only question I have. All right. Well, now here's this.
Spies.
Hey.
Someone took your plans away. So what's all of us? There ain't nobody.
Spies. Spies. Spies.
Like us.
All right. Yes. This is our weekly segment here. It's called Nick D. Show Spies. That's when you listen to this radio station 24/7. And whenever anybody mentions me or the show in any capacity, you become a spy. We want to know about it. And you will send that off, the information, who said it, what time, all that stuff, to nickdshow@gmail.com. nickdshow@gmail.com. All right. What do we got?
All right, so just one mention this week, but it was sent in by like five different people. So oh. lots of people heard this. This is on Steve Cochran's show.
Hey, before you go, have you followed this popcorn recipe thief story?
I don't know what you mean. Oh, the Garrett's?
Yeah, the Garrett's yeah. popcorn thing. It was only three people that knew the secret recipe. Yeah.
And some employee stole the secret recipe?
Yeah. I didn't know Garrett's popcorn had a secret recipe.
Like Kentucky Fried Chicken?
Yeah, that's like what I was thinking. KFC, the seven herbs and spices. That's the only secret recipe I'm aware of.
Yeah. I didn't know that. Isn't it just caramel corn and cheese corn?
It's heaven on kernels.
It is heaven on kernels. That's true, but...
I like to suck on it.
Call Nick. Because I believe she just made out of context in a Hall of Fame fashion.
Right.
There it is.
That's a double.
There it is. Those happen a lot, Tom. When people say something, sometimes I get mentioned when people say something and then they immediately go, oh, man, that's going to end up on Out of Context. I personally think it's a badge of honor if you end up on Out of Context. That's just me.
Be proud.
Yes, absolutely.
We should send John an email later. Yeah. Say, good job.
By the way, I just looked at the TV. I have Channel 9 on, the morning news on right now. And did I just see that they're projecting that by Saturday evening we may have 5.1 inches of snow?
Well, it's been nice working with you, Nick. I think I'm just going to move.
Did I just see that? Am I seeing this correctly?
Unbelievable.
Oh my God. Anyway, that was nice to see on the screen there. Even more in up north in Wisconsin. But they said at O'Hare, 5.1 inches.
Mm.
I don't even understand. I can't even understand. The only thing that's good about this is that maybe it won't be a hot summer. Maybe this will continue all the way through. We'll like have the 50s in August. It'll be high in 50s.
Great.
Which I would love. But I don't even. And it's Saturday too, when everybody's going to be going to see, we're going to see Avengers Saturday, and that's when it's supposed to be at that time. That's when it's supposed to be the worst.
Oh,
coming home from yeah. Avengers is going to be, you know, we're going to have to
get the snow tires on.
We're going to have to grab onto Iron Man's legs, and he can fly us. He can fly us back home. Oh, brother! All right, let's play the opening theme, and then just get one fly jam in before the break. Here we go.
When I grew up on the farm, fly was something we sprayed to kill, and jam was something we put on our breakfast toast.
Jam, fly jam, fly jams Friday.
Oh yeah, this is Fly Jam Friday on your overnight radio. With my man, Nick D, on 720 WGN.
All right. Yeah. All right. All right. So we've got some fly jams. Here's the deal, man. Get your requests in now. Everything funky. We got our DJ. Is he checked in? Is our DJ checked in? Did he leave?
Oh, yeah, Luscious Huscious, baby.
There it is. We got Luscious Huscious is here. I'm Wiki Wiki Nikki. Viggity Viggity Vic, Double Fied V is running around in the newsroom like a lunatic. And we want to hear from you. We've got some fly jams to get to. It's all funky. It's all fly. It's all R&B. And by the way, I don't want to blame Morgan Kochmeyer because I think she's adorable and she's a really good meteorologist, but she's the one responsible for putting that graphic up on the screen.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Morgan. I appreciate that. That's real nice of you.
Good job, none of you.
All right. One fly jam before we break here for the weather.
All right. This one's coming to us from Dave. He just wanted to hear a little Prince. He gave me Dealer's Choice, which I appreciate. So here's Prince in the new Power Generation with Seven.
And the sidewalk there, no one in the whole universe will ever compare. I am yours now and you are mine, and together we'll love through all space and time, so don't cry. One day all seven will die.
One of my favorite Prince songs of all time. Absolutely one of my favorite Prince songs of all time. And he, of course, is the definition of fly right there. All right, Fly Jams Friday, everybody. R&B, funky stuff. Get it going. It's Friday, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Luscious Huscious is ready to go. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Friday. That means Fly Jams Friday. And we want to hear from you. Funky stuff, 312-981-7200. Who requested that?
So that was Sam, wanted to hear Nowhere to Run by Martha and the Vandellas.
That's the original version. A cover version of that song is featured in the great movie The Warriors, which we were mentioning a little bit earlier this morning. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right here on WGN. All right there, Luscious Huscious. What do we got next?
All right, next up, Blame It on the Boogie, coming to us from Mike in Louisville.
Good song. Blame it on the boogie. Okay. All right. Getting funky this morning. Oh, yeah. I love that song.
Oh, it's amazing.
Okay. Who's next there, Luscious Huscious? What do we got?
Next up, we're hearing from our good pal, Dino. This guy's got deep knowledge. It's Catch with Get On Freak.
Here we go.
Oh,
Yeah, that's right. You know, when there's a talk break with a deep voice, you know that's Fly. Yeah, baby. Like you're.
I know what you
like. Let's hear your introduction again. There, like, that's what we're talking about.
If we must,
yeah.
Oh yeah, luscious hushes, baby.
There he is.
Amazing.
Oh, come on. All right, who else is getting funky this morning?
All right, we're actually going to slow things down a little bit. Robert wanted to hear a little Commodores. Here is Sail On.
Oh boy.
And I don't mind about the things you're gonna say, Lord. I gave all my money and my time. I know it's a shame, but I'm giving you back your name. Guess I'll be on my way. I won't be back to stay.
Oh, Commodores. Oh, yeah.
No one else like them.
Yeah, absolutely. Gotta love that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so there you go. There's a little... That's classic Commodores, too. That's been featured.
Oh, yeah.
That's been featured many, many times here on Fly Jams Friday, and deservedly so.
I believe it.
Yeah. So, all right, what do we got next?
All right, next up, it's one everybody should know. It's The Temptations with a story of a Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
Papa was a Rolling Stone.
I don't know if you know this or not, Tom, but when I used to listen to this song as a kid, I used to think that when they were saying Papa was a Rolling Stone, wherever he laid his hat was his home, and when he died, all he left us was a loan. I thought it was debt. I thought he left them a loan that he had to pay, that the family had to pay off. That's where my that's where
astute.
My mind went. Yeah. It wasn't alone as in by yourself. It was alone as in, damn it, there's going to be interest.
I get so drawn up in the guitar. It's got so much bounce, it'll leave your clothes static free.
It's a wah-wah, baby.
Oh, yeah.
That's the wah-wah. But, yeah, that's what I always thought it was, alone. Oh, man. Dad left him with a debt. So.
Oh, man.
All right.
All right. Next up, a cover, a Prince cover coming to us from Steve. It's the Pride of Wales, Tom Jones doing Kiss.
You have to be beautiful to turn me on. I just need your body, baby, from dusk till dawn. You don't need experience to turn me out. You just leave it all up to me. I'll show you what it's all about. You don't have to be rich to be my girl. You don't have to be cool to rule my world. Ain't no particular sign I'm more compatible with. I just
I am pro this version.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah, I love it.
That's not unusual.
I love it. Oh, come on, man. What are you doing? Had some Henny Youngman juice this morning, evidently.
I know. I just topped up my cup.
All right. All right.
So, got one from Papa DiGilio.
Oh, my dad!
Yeah.
All right.
Sent in a nice one. It's Carla Bonoff with Personally. I've never heard this one before.
All right.
It's great.
Bring me to
nothing like the feeling you get.
is. I know that song. I didn't know my dad liked it, though.
Oh.
My dad requesting personally this morning. All right. Well, there you go. We'll do it again. Thank you, Luscious Hushes. We will do it again next Friday, getting all funky here on a Friday morning. And all the regular Friday features will be back. Also, we'll be back on Monday with the movie reviews and my dad telling a joke and much, much more. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will be back on Monday morning with the Monday morning movie reviews. And we'll be reviewing that small, low-budget, independent movie, The Avengers, as well. And my dad will tell a joke.